Pues que pena.
Aquí estoy en YouTube.
When we present, I going to be using the same laptop because I it sounds like there are colleagues in the room that here.
Yes. The one that I told you, Dominic's account, it's a laptop we're going to present from. The other one is the main device that's going to open the video on it so you can see the colleagues when they present.
Okay. No, I was just being cautious of the noise.
Okay. No, the main
from colleagues. We can hear colleagues speaking on the background.
We're in a auditorium.
Oh, okay, leadership. No, we would, I'm just request colleagues to... keep it down.
Okay, no problem. Okay,
but the noise is quite. We won't be able to hear the presenter if the noise is. Thanks. You can remove the presentation now until we start.
Okay, thank you.
I know. When I heard those two.
Recording in progress.
Good morning to everybody.
Morning, Chair.
Good morning, Chair.
Morning. Welcome, Minister, and to your team. We are going to be receiving a report on the issue of the CRT recordings. This arose as a result of our oversight visit to various provinces. Both teams, the coastal province and the inland provinces, found that there were problems, especially in the magistrate court, with some of the CRT machines. As a result, cases had to be postponed because there was no court recordings. So we have resolved as a committee that we need to have the minister and the department appearing before the committee to take us through as to what has happened and what are the measures that they are putting in place to ensure that this thing does not happen again. As we know that people who appear before the magistrate court and those who would want to have their case reviewed or want to go on appeal, there are no court transcripts, which is a serious problem in terms of the dispensing of justice. So we thought it's a very serious matter that we needed to have the department led by the minister to take us through. Over to you, Minister.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity of engagement. As you are aware, today is it's a cabinet day. I have been excused from cabinet to come for this engagement, and I will request that with the earliest available opportunity, when the committee is able to release me to go back to the meeting, as I have got an item to present. I will also be addressing the Law Society AGM at 10:30. And I do think this is a very important engagement because it's at the core of the administration of justice. And I attended when called upon by this committee. Honorable Chairperson and the honorable members, when the NDP stated that one of the major shifts which are required is to build a capable developmental state, it was a recognition that the state requires well-run and effectively coordinated state institutions with skilled public servants who are committed to the public good and capable of delivering consistent services to the people while prioritizing the nation's developmental objectives. The Department of Justice and to some extent the Department of Correctional Services is an advantage point. We are rebuilding from the bottom up, as the members of this committee are aware of the performance indicators of both departments in the last 2 years, financial years. Upon assuming office, the Department of Justice had a vacancy rate which exceeded 28% for senior management positions. Within the period of 2 years, this has been reduced by almost 10%. By the end of this financial year, ending this week, this will be reduced to 17%. It is anticipated that by this end of the financial year, which starts in April, we will have filled almost all the senior management posts. Let me remind members in practical terms what these vacancies meant for the department. It meant that the department had no Director General, Deputy Director General for Corporate Services, Chief Financial Officer, Chief Master, Chief Director for Supply Chain, and several other critical Chief Director positions at the senior management level. The Chief Financial Officer and the Chief Director for Supply Chain post became vacant when the incumbents were undergoing disciplinary hearings. on issues of misconduct related to and forensic reports. Having said that, Chair, one of the consequences, this weakened the capacity in the Department for Contract Management. With the senior management team in the department has not managed these processes in an efficient manner. This is a weakness has also been exacerbated by the ransomware attack, with the effect of bringing a number of departmental systems to a standstill. Honorable members, contract management has been identified by the department senior management as well as myself as executive authority and the deputy minister as a very high risk for the department's ability to perform its mandate. Section 38 of the PFMA places responsibility on the accounting authority for financial management functions. Section 44 provides for the assignment of powers and duties by the accounting officer to other officials, and Section 45 details the responsibilities of these other officials. The CRT contract in question today presented a peculiar set of facts, which the accounting authority will be able to further outline to the committee. From the perspective of the executive authority, I have called for a comprehensive review of what led to the lapse of the contract without an alternative, and why was the contract left to lapse up until there was no alternative that the courts could use at the time, and when the alternative was found not to be very sufficient, could not respond to the needs of the courts at the time. We've also asked for an existing and proposed contract undertaken more specially during planning and budgeting process for the next financial year, which has been completed. This is also because, as I've said, the challenges of contract management affects the day-to-day operation of the department, particularly in the ICT space. I have emphasized that oversight of the contract management must be implemented, managed, enforced, and monitored and reported on. The accounting authority must take all reasonable steps to ensure that contracts are properly monitored and managed, contracts are classified according to the level of management intervention required, and contracts are monitored and managed appropriately according to their classification. We have also impressed upon the Director General to implement effective consequence management, particularly where there has been a lapse like this contract. Where there were lapses or where officials simply developed a laissez-faire attitude towards their work. I must mention to the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Chairperson, that this issue of this contract has been a subject of engagement between ourselves, the Ministry, and the department officials for several months to find solutions and to identify where we need urgent intervention on the matter. And I think the Director General will detail some of the issues that they have to go through to deal with these matters. The Deputy Minister and I have occasions conducted unannounced visits to courts around the country, and we will continue to do so, to monitor the various challenges that the courts find themselves of infrastructure, which the committee has seen, and also the technology and the systems that the courts uses across the country. Yourself as members of parliament carry oversight work on behalf of our people. We appreciate the recent visits that you conducted at the courts at various parts of the country. We are aware of the wide range of challenges that you came across. In keeping with the spirit of transparency, we also believe that the input that you have made will help the department to strengthen its system to deal with these challenges. We have expressed strong views on the need for courts to leverage on technology, but as members of the Portfolio Committee are well aware, for this to be achieved, we need stakeholders such as CETA to come on board. As CETA plays a larger role in the administration of ICT in government departments. The department has had several engagements with our counterparts on how CETA can be more effective in helping us to combat some of the challenges courts experience on technology, including the matter under discussion today, because some of the technologies that are used in our courts are uniquely for the courts only, and other state departments may not really be able to utilize this. And I think as the DG present, the members of the committee will be able to understand this. The organizational structure that we have approved as the executive will bring a complete overhaul on the rolling out of ICT in the department. This will be achieved through prioritizing internal capacity, where people with requisite skills will be appointed to reduce or eliminate full dependency on contractors and external organizations. The chairperson will also be aware that the entire ICT department is almost managed through contractors, and there is no internal capacity like in other departments in this Department of Justice. And as a result, we have now approved a structure that will allow for building and insourcing of the capacity that is in this ICT space, including creating a branch of ICT, which was not there before. The observations that the portfolio committee made are matters we were well versed with and in the process of addressing. And we are also glad that the issues that the public face on a day-to-day basis by in our courts have been brought to the fore by the report of the portfolio committee. The DG will also present a detailed measure in terms of the issues to address the case backlogs in our courts that has been asked also by the portfolio committee. Lastly, Chairperson, thank you for inviting us here. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Members, I would like your guidance. Should we have two proposals, free to add or to take one of the proposals or to add other proposals if this one is not acceptable? One proposal is to have the DG coming in immediately after the Minister, so that when we ask questions, we ask questions on the basis of a comprehensive briefing. And we have also asked for a report of the internal audit and risk management. That is one, that we have a comprehensive briefing, then we can be able to engage. The other one, the other view or proposal, is that given the request that the minister wants to go back to cabinet, the other one is to have questions now based on what the minister has just said, and then also, and then we, once the minister is gone, then we proceed with the presentation of the DG, head of internal audit and risk unit. Can I have guidance from the members? Honorable Janji, followed by Honorable Horn.
No, thank you, Chair. My suggestion would be, in terms of the two scenarios or options you're placing attention, given the request of the minister that we it's now almost 9:45.
Yes.
He is addressing the law society at 10:30. He's not going to be able to move that. If you were to allow for the DG to come in, I don't see them spending less than 30 minutes just on presentation. And so it seems that you are actually giving us one option. The other one is academic. And therefore, I want to support your other option. Okay. That says, let's utilize the few minutes to reflect with the minister based on his brief remarks, so that we're able to release him to attend both the cabinet and the law society issues, because if we don't do that, it will mean that we're going to rush issues. on the basis that we want to raise everything else whilst the minister is here. I would want us to have a brief high-level reflections with the minister, and then we release him, and then we spend quality time on what the DG and his team is going to present to us, so that he will get the briefing as to what our conclusions are going to be, because I think we came here having read the presentation, and you would appreciate that we're coming into this meeting almost with a few things that we want to place on the table. So sorry for being long, but that's what I'm suggesting.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Honorable Horn.
Yeah, I'll be very quick. Thank you, Chair. I agree with the Honorable Janji.
Oh, it's very much unlike Honorable Horn. Thank you very much. So can I now invite members to interact with the presentation of the minister or the remarks of the minister before we move to the other presentations, Honorable Horn? Is that your hand or a new hand?
If you'll allow me, it's a new hand. I did take it down momentarily and then put it up again, just to be technically correct.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Perfect, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and good morning once again. And to the Minister, thank you for joining us. We know that you're very busy, so we will try and make use of this opportunity to engage constructively. But then to say through you, Chair, that this issue is of a massive concern. Firstly, because the impact the very issue has on the dysfunctionality of our court system is massive. So even in isolation, the impact of the failures on the part of the department to manage contracts regarding court recordings is of a very serious nature. It's quite clear from the answers the minister has given of late on written questions that we now are faced with a situation where more or less every court case that gets enrolled ultimately will end up on the backlog roll. And we all know that has a very detrimental impact on the ability ultimately of stakeholders to deliver justice, because the more things drag on in respect of court cases, the better the chances are of either witnesses or evidence not being able to be put on record properly. So that, I think, the first background. But then, Chair, what is of a worry is even if one listens to the narrative of the minister today, and I'm saying this really not to be overly critical, it would seem that the minister just deems this as yet another bump in the road. The minister make use of terminology of building from the ground up. And with respect, I don't think in respect of the court recording technology that needed to be necessary. The minister gave an indication in his very first budget speech in 2019 of the importance of court recording in the modern age, when he boasted about the fact that the digital court recording technology has been rolled out. So in that sense, the minister is on record as showing a full appreciation of the importance of this aspect of court proceedings. And then to come and say that, yes, because of vacancies and this and that, we're ultimately sitting now with a situation where, as we speak, courts are still postponing matters because of a system that's not in place. It's with respect not acceptable. The minister, I think, owes as an explanation, if it is then to be apportioned or a blame to be apportioned on the fact that there was a whole lot of senior vacancies, then the minister owes us an explanation as to why it took so long to fill these senior vacancies. It's not, the record will also show that this committee and the minister, based on either the advice of this committee or by showing some insight into the challenges facing him, from the very start after he took office, wrestled with the importance of not sitting with vacancies among senior management. And now to hear that, yes, it's in a space of 2 years' time, it's been brought down from 28% to 18%, and it will now again go down to 17% with respect is unacceptable. And I think the minister needs to acknowledge that it should have been handled better, that aspect. The second aspect, however, also, Chair, if we just for a moment still focus on this specific issue, is that if one goes back to our minutes and also our reports since this committee was established after the election in 2019, it's quite clear that even if there was any lack of insight on the part of the minister about the importance of proper contract management, that this committee, along with the Auditor General, appraised the minister of the importance to act in a proactive manner regarding contract management as far back as a meeting we had on the 17th of November 2020, which was a Friday afternoon, where we dealt with these findings for the previous financial year, and where in very clear terms said one of the repeat findings we're making and where there has been a stagnation is in respect of contract management, and if it's not addressed soon, it will have dire consequences for this department. If you link that to BRRR reports of both that year and the year thereafter, where the department was given very clear advice that contract management has to be ramped up, then one has to say that the department and the minister was forewarned. So the second specific question I want to ask is, why was sufficient measures not put in place, despite the fact that there was all sorts of actors that had responsibility on this? Why was sufficient measures not in place that the minister and the department was well aware that the procurement process around court recording technology had to start well enough in time for the current contract not to run out and leave more or less the whole criminal justice and to a large extent the civil justice system or the civil legal system in limbo? Why did that not happen, despite the fact that there was all sorts of actors not in place? Why did the minister not show an appreciation of the challenges that would face this department if something as core to the functionality of our court system was to be faced with this? And then lastly, Jay, the one thing, I don't know whether the minister would want to react, but the assurances that new systems and ramped up systems and improved systems around contract management and early warnings around contracts that in terms of which procurement processes will have to start afresh, that will now happen in a timely manner. We've received those assurances in the past as well from the and the department. So to again receive that verbal assurance today is simply not good enough. I would suggest, Chair, in any event, after our engagement with also the department going forward, but I would want to hear the minister on this as well, that we need a full report on what systems, whether it's a dashboard or whatever, is now in place, and how that warnings, those amber lights flashing, how we can be assured that they have been set up so that processes start in a timely manner to prevent a reoccurrence of situations like this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Should also bear in mind that we also have this limitation of 10:30, and the other members would want to ask questions. Honorable Janjin.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank the Minister for the brief highlights and remarks he has made on this important issue. And I think I want to follow suit on him on one aspect, because I think that he has appropriately defined the nature of the problem when he says this is at the core of the administration of justice. In other words, Chair, the issues that we're dealing with are the heartbeat of this department. Maybe, Chair, it's important to highlight that just from your opening remarks, there seems to be three areas that we're going to be concerned about for this presentation. Now with the minister and with the department, I think you have raised the issue that there is a problem. So we're here with the understanding that we've got a big problem in our hand, and it seems that the issue of the problem is a settled one. It's not about debating. I don't see a dispute on it that we have a problem. I will be hoping to see if the department has a different view in that. But secondly, we are interested, Chair, as you indicated, on the intervention to the problem. We don't just want to discuss indefinitely. We want to know. And I think from the point of an oversight of the committee, we would be interested, Minister and your team, going beyond the problem to understand whether do you have a recovery plan on what is a problem that you have identified that all of us might agree to, and whether that recovery plan will be a reliable one that we can follow and it can be actioned. And so the few kind of questions that I want to pose to the minister as we build up to the more detailed discussion with the department, I think the first one, Chair, is to specifically ask the minister, when did the minister become aware of this problem? When was this brought to your attention, Minister, by the department? We know that the contract ended in April 2021. That's part of the problem. That's part of the settled problem, which has no. Would the minister have been aware about this problem on the 21st of in April 2021? Or were you aware of this problem when we did our oversight and that we raised issues up? So that's my first question that I would want the minister to share in confidence with us as to when did he know about the fact that we have this kind of problem. And perhaps to follow that up, Minister, by telling us, once you were aware, whether it's in April or before April or after our oversight, what did you do? As the buck stops with you. Once you are aware that there's this problem that was brought to your attention, what did you do? And was that was going to help us travel the journey with you? Based on the fact that you've approached be trying this as at the core of the administration of justice. And being an elected the head of this, and not being a functionary, I understand your focus to be on the impact of the administration of justice. And based on that, because your focus won't be on the inputs, on where finances go to. There's an accounting officer to deal with that. Your interest has to be these services, how are they impacting on the most vulnerable people out there? The kind of people who would go to court and be told that your case is not happening there. That's the kind of impact that I'm really interested in, so that I don't draw you into the operations of the department. And based on that impact, it would be very clear that part of the problem that we know is that many cases have been postponed. And as we sit here, it's about 700 backlog cases as a result of this issue. And perhaps later on we will ask them even the nature of those cases. And perhaps the last point I want to throw, Honorable Chair, was I'm holding back on a lot of other issues for the next discussion. The last point I want to throw to the Minister, so that she digests that and responds to it. In 2020, we would have made a decision as the committee, a decision related to a firm determination that we believed in then, that this department needed an assistance of the Public Service Commission. That's what we did in 2020. I want you to reflect on that, because in a way you can tell us, are you averse on us either mentioning what we raised then in terms of the role of the Public Service Commission in assisting in the recovery of this, because you might want to reflect on that, to tell us whether you are averse to that particular issue. The last point, Chair, finally, to the Minister, I don't know whether they have shared with you, Minister, that if the problem is contract management, would they have shared with you, now the department, that which other services are going to be like this as a result of this problem of contract management? Have tabled to you a list of beyond this which we're dealing with, the kind of services that have not really come to the attention of this committee, but they are affected as a result of that issue of contract management. I just wanted to pose those issues to the Minister, Chair, and I will come back later when we deal with the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji, Honorable Nomathemba Maseko Chele.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. Can I request, Chair, I'm on load shedding. Can I request not to show my video, just for now? I'm afraid,
yes. Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and also good morning to the Minister, and also appreciate the issues that he raised and gave this morning to us, in front of us, Chair. But without waste of time, Chair, I agree, and we acknowledge that the Minister has inherited all, if not most, problems. These problems have his chairperson, and we are where we are today because of what we have been raising in this committee, in front of the minister, in front of the officials. My issue is that, Chair, I think I just want to know if maybe the minister is aware about the time frames of the department when it comes to which contract is about to end and who is about to go, so that maybe there is a plan. The department, do the department inform him about these issues as to when are they going to lapse and go? Because if you check, Chair, all these courts where we went, it seems as if the problems are the same. It is not only one court. They are the same. The contracts, some of them, they are running on like a day-to-day contract, monthly contracts. If you remember, we went to Mbombela. Mbombela, there was a contract, they say it expired, and they were doing it, I don't know, 3 months or what, something like that. But I wanted to find out, because we are agreeing that there is a problem of contract management. Is there any way that the department, in their plans to the minister, informing the minister as to what is about to happen in terms of these issues? Because if maybe the minister is aware, and then say the department. So, Chair, the minister said in his address now, he instructed the department to address the issue of consequences management on these issues. Does he have the report? Do we have progress on this matter of taking these actions against these officials who have put us into where we are today? And then also, Chairperson, I would want the last one that I would request, maybe I would take the opportunity to say, I heard the minister saying he's going to the cabinet to address the cabinet. Is there any way, maybe in future, for the minister to propose to the cabinet to allow him sometimes to make a follow-up on this? Because these people, these officials that put us into this mess, they might be somewhere within the department, and they are still going on messing up. It's either they are in other government institutions or they are employed somewhere. So can it be possible just to, like, as we blacklist companies, also blacklist these officials? Because there is no way that we are going to win this battle, not only in this government, in this department, also in other departments. Is there any maybe a way that maybe the minister can also assist us? Chairperson, lastly, he also inherited the officials. Those officials, the minister came in, most of those officials that are sitting there, they are not new. It can be only our DG. And these problems have been here for a long time. What happened and what happened to those, and what is happening to those officials? Because even if you can say, ask them now and say, you are aware, officials, you are aware that you are in this mess because of some of them, if they have to take their responsibility. If we say to them, can we work more overtime without money? I'm telling you, it can be a lot of noise. They can't even sacrifice and go an extra mile, some of them. But we are in this mess because of them. It was just my last comment on that one, Chair. Can we have also the officials who are there to assist us to deal with these issues? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I request not to switch on the video because I'm now on the road to the function of that law society. But I have heard all the comments. The only one where I missed a bit some of the parts, maybe it was network, was the Honorable Jale, but I heard the last part dealing with the issues of the consequence management and the officials. If I did not hear others, maybe she will just help me. On the first comments by Honorable Horn, on the whether it was necessary situation that we find ourselves in. We are all in agreement that indeed it's not a necessary situation or an acceptable situation. I agree with Honorable Janji. They're all in agreement. It's an unacceptable question is that he asked is what took so long to fill the vacancies, which obviously, Chairperson, as you are aware, some of the vacancies, they take an average of between 6 months to even a year to fill due to the processes that have to be undergone, including the processes of cabinet. Which we followed through all of them. We did our attend to the vacancies. The issue of obviously one of the issues which is at the core of this challenge, Chairperson, is the fact that the Department of Justice, as big as it is, the CIO or the head of ISM, which is it was at a very low level of a chief director for some years. It's only now that we've now changed the organizational structure to be at the level of the DDG, which is also still awaiting approval from DCSA, which is outside our hands. The second aspect, Chair, which I raised is the fact that the department has been run by contractors. The entire ICT system of the Department of Justice has been run by contractors. And we have now approved an interim structure that will enable the department to fill these positions and insource them. Because the department is huge as ours. For it to be able to drive modernization, to drive its own system, it needs a internal capacity. Obviously, you will need external service providers from time to time. But there must be a foundation or a background within the department that is able to interact and handle the matters. And that is the capacity that we are currently looking at building, awaiting approval on that also. And the court recording system, whether it should have been handled better, this system, I agree with Honorable Horn even on that indeed it could have been handled better. There is no disagreement that the contract, when it was known that it is going to be due, the department should have started a process to advertise and so forth. But I think those are details that the DG and the department will be able to answer what happened and what procurement processes they had to undergo and all that and which committees and all those issues that the Honorable Judge said he does not want to put me in. But those are issues that I think the DG will be able to take the committee into confidence. The issue of the lack of insight in terms of contract management, yes, indeed, is a challenge that we have. And as the Honorable Anne has said, that it is an issue that has been raised by the AG and as an issue for the department. Hence, we engage the department to attend to this issue of contract management as a matter of patience to attend to these challenges that we are currently faced with. And I think On the other one of the vacancies, the Honorable Chairperson, you will remember that at the time, all these issues were happening. The head of supply chain in the department and also the CFO were also undergoing a disciplinary hearing. So during that period, they were undergoing a disciplinary hearing. Both of them, they ended up resigning during the period of the disciplinary hearing. I'm not saying that is an explanation, because when they were undergoing disciplinary hearings, there were other people that had to act. But it did affect the operation of the department. The disciplinary hearing took some time for them before they resigned. When did I become aware of this? I think it was late last year. I'm no longer sure of the exact month, but the DG informed me that there is this matter, and he was also summoned by a magistrate, if I'm not mistaken, in Tzaneen. I'm no longer exactly sure of the month, in Tzaneen, but it was late last year, around November or December. I'm no longer very sure of the month, but around that period. In Tzaneen, the magistrate had summoned the DG to appear there to explain on this matter because of the impact of the court recording devices in the court system. And also the DM also raised the matter with myself around the same period, which convened a meeting with the expo of the department to engage on this issue, to say what is the solution. And obviously, they raised the issues that you are going to hear that relates to procurement matters. And we were clear to the department that for us, service delivery is the priority. They will have to find a way to resolve this issue in a manner that does not flaunt the laws, but delivery cannot stop, particularly on this issue, because of the issues that relates to procurement laws and so forth. They need to find a way to resolve this issue. And I think when they did attend to the issues of trying to find a responsive bid, they could not find the one that would be suitable to resolve this issue. Because of the unique nature of the matter which I've raised earlier, that this court recording is unique. It can only be found or it is only used by the Department of Justice. It's only us who run courts. So meaning the technology that is used is a unique tailor-made for the Department of Justice. So the department then approached me to approach my counterpart, Minister Mputu Chabeni, and that was on the 17th of December when I wrote to her to request for a deviation from the State Information Technology Agency Act for the provision of court recording technology support and maintenance.
So Minister, there's a problem with your sound.
Chairperson, are you able to hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I was still saying, I then, because the department, I think they had went out twice on a tender, and they said it was non-responsive because of the unique nature of this system. They then requested that I write to the Minister of Communications and Digital Technology, which I did on the 17th of December 2020, to request for deviation from State Information Technology Agency, CITA Act, for the provision of the court recording technology support and maintenance contract, which I did. And she then also agreed to help us, which then enabled the department to attend to some of the procurement issues that I think the DG will be better placed to explain, including them engaging with the national treasurer. And in all these situations, we were very clear to the department that this is a matter of priority because it's at the core of the administration of justice by the courts. The departments will do everything legally possible to ensure that the service provider is found to help with the court system. And I think the DG will be able to explain the issues that relate to the National Treasury and how they then attended to that. And we also raised the issue that there must be consequence management for whoever was involved or allowed the contract to lapse at the time and could not be able to respond to attend to it as swiftly and as urgently as possible. And I think the DG will also explain to the committee in that regard. The issue whether we are able to assure the committee going forward, whether this will not happen again or not. Yes, we are able to because we have now said to management, we need the whole contract management system. They need to report to us all the contracts that could fall within the same category. And we were told that at this stage, there will be none. But we have said if such contracts, if such things do happen, we need to be notified. As you will have seen, Chairperson, that the contract lapsed in April. And we only became aware of this incident when there were complaints and when there were issues that were happening around, as I've said, late last year, around November or December. I think maybe it's because they thought that they will be able to handle it through the process of a responsive bid that will enable them to respond to this court recording system, which they will detail to the committee when they present. I think I've also answered the question from Honorable Jelle, that the one that I heard. Indeed, some of the officials are still with us, but some of them are not really responsible for this because this falls under the court services and it's also an issue that falls within the supply chain processes and issues of finance and all that. And when I said that we have been able to fill the vacancy, it also includes the vacancy of filling the post of the CFO who is going to start on the 1st of April, who is the woman who is the former CFO at the DMR. She has served there for 10 years, which we believe that will really help us in this contract space and the finance space to be able to come to terms with some of the challenges in the space. There are other vacancies in the space that have been filled, which we also believe will enable us to respond appropriately to these issues. And whether we will be averse to this issue of the Public Service Commission, we always work with DPSA, they advise us and so forth on the various aspects that relate to the department. And I do think that with the new reporting lines that will come and the quarterly reports, there is some kind of improvement in terms of performance. If the department could be given a further chance, I do think that by the end of this financial year, this committee will be able to see a significant improvement in the performance of the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. Just a few issues before you leave. How many times do you receive a risk assessment report? And how many times do you meet with your management, your top management team of the department and the report of the internal audit?
Chairperson, the set date of meeting with the top management is a quarterly meeting, the MINESCO meeting, which we hold per quarter. But sometimes there could be other interventions. The last one we had was in December 2020 with the minister meeting, but there will be time to time where we engage with the DTGs on various aspects and issues from time to time, including the DG on issues where they are expected or subject matter. We engage from on a regular basis, and the last one which we had was yesterday in the morning before the full committee. We engaged with the legislative branch on a briefing on the land court bill and some of the issues that has been raised by the public on the public comment. So there are regular interactions as and when there are issues that need to be addressed. And we also get those risk reports during those meetings. We also meet with the budget committee as and when they request the meeting in terms of the briefings and also the AG's report.
You said to us that you were made aware of this problem towards the end of the year, and the report that is before us is that the contract expired around April, because your risk assessment and your risk management should be able to say to the management team and to yourself, these are the risks that if they materialize, they can have significant impact on the department. So between April and December, when you were made aware, you had meetings with your management to discuss quarterly reports. So the risk assessment did not indicate that there is this potential risk that has got a serious impact on service delivery.
Yeah, Chairperson, I was not made aware earlier than that.
Okay. Now, maybe we might need to discuss this issue further when the minister has time. Because we still have to discuss the report of the oversight visit in its entirety, including the Palm Ridge Magistrate Court. But we will ensure that Minister will schedule a day where there is no cabinet so that we can have enough time to discuss with you on some of these issues, because we think that I think this was more of an introduction in terms of discussing in detail some of these issues with you as an executive authority. We will deal with the issues that affect the accounting officer and other senior managers, but we think that it's important that we should schedule enough time to traverse some of these issues with you. We understand that you are now left with 2 minutes before you start your next meeting. Members, can we excuse the minister with the proviso that we will come back and continue on this issue at the date that will be determined by the committee and his office. But it will not be Wednesday when he has to attend to cabinet meetings.
Agreed, Chair, so that we can get the team.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Minister, you are excused.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. DG, we will give you 2 minutes to upload your slides. But I think members, all of them, they had an opportunity yesterday to go through your presentations. So we don't expect but for the purposes of other stakeholders who are part of this meeting and those who will be watching from home, it will be important that the slides are flighted so that people can follow. Can we have a 2 minute break, members? Thank you very much, DJ. Welcome. And over to you. Welcome to your team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was speaking, I didn't realize we were muted. I wanted also to just check if the slides are reflecting to the Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members.
No, they are reflecting, and when you were muted, we were just seeing the picture of Mr. Pierre. You must be aware of him. I think he wants to be the teacher.
I'll take note of that character. At this stage, though, I wouldn't mind if he was to be the chair for the state station.
Thank you
very much, Chair. We had the presentation, and then we'll take us through the presentation, and we have taken note at some points. I think as we wrap up the presentation, we may also deal with some matters that the Minister has said we will deal with them. In broad terms, Chair, I will just reflect the broad structure of the presentation and the issues that the colleagues will cover without necessarily going to the details that you have highlighted. It is important that we do reflect on that a year to 6 months and 3 months before the expiry of the CRT, there was a challenge with the top management, the top echelon of the management of the department in terms of instability, which the Auditor General had noted, which related to the vacancy of the Director General, and specifically the Deputy General for Corporate Services, who was only pointed almost 3 months before the expiry of the contract. And also the fact that the acting CIO, Chief Information Officer, will directly have borne the responsibility for the management of this contract left in August. And linked to that, the Chief Financial Officer, under whose branch this responsibility resides, was suspended and for reasons that the Minister had mentioned, including the head of supply chain management, who also equally, as whose responsibility lies around this area. And even the director below the chief then left the department. These are not excuses, but these are critical factors to be noted, as the Auditor General had highlighted, that the strategic management of the department at a time, I think, was a turning point in terms of those suspensions, as well as the legacy, the historic matters relating to the ICT management structure of the department. And it's something that we are still battling now, because it has been years, I think for more than 11 years, that the department has taken an approach of project management using contract employees. And in September, that very same year, that's 2020, and that's between a period of 6 months and 3 months before the expiry of the contract, the majority of officials who were on contract had to be relieved at the end of September because their contract could no longer be renewed. So generally, if you look at the magnitude of or the number of contracts that the department has to manage, particularly ICT and general contracts, there's no trace of an effective contract management system. And the internal risk assessment of the department had highlighted this fact in 2018 and 2019. So that's part of what the presentation will reflect. But specifically itself, the court recording technology, a new CFO, acting CFO came in August, and of course had to wrestle with a number of issues, including dealing with the midterm budget assessment and preparation for the new budget for the department, but also equally specifically had to deal with these matters. And the details will be explained of the negotiations that had to take place between the service provider and the department. But I think it is an important point to mention the fact that the cost of technology as deployed in 2015 for a period of 5 years and running until second week or third week of April 2021 was the first deployment of that specific court recording technology of that particular process. So the service provider who had provided it, meaning that it was a contract of its own nature, as Minister would have explained. But you will recall as well that just around the period the problem started, because in the first 3 months after the contract had expired, there were measures in place to deal with it using other contracts within permissible treasury regulations. But the problem started from August, where there were no other means to deal with this, and the procurement process started. CETA RFQ 1183, which is what we're supposed to utilize to find a replacement for the maintenance of the CRT, became a huge problem for the department. And for the period between August and December, which is basically the period that actually the challenges started emanating. And that's why in that process, in that period, the department was working hard to ensure that there is a contract in place. But the challenges around CETA became so apparent and they created better problems that made it difficult to find a replacement until the request that was made to the Minister of Communication and Information Technology, who could not come into the system to assist us. But also just to mention that we had engaged Treasury on matters of procurement from as early as May last year. And they had seconded a person who only came to assist us for a period of not more than 2 months. And the official left due to contractual issues between that official and the Department of Treasury. It was out of our realization that we may not necessarily have the capacity to address some of the challenges. That's why we reached out to Treasury to assist us in that period. And unfortunately, due to the issues that I've mentioned, the person had to leave. So with this background, and further, we'll then move to ask the colleagues who are dealing with internal audit matters to reflect on the measures that are in place to identify similar matters, including this one, and the intervention plans that are in place that and the improvements that we are seeing over the past 8 months. Equally, the enterprise-wide risk assessment as well has picked up this issue from as early as 2018 and 2019, generally our ICT, as a risk that needed to be monitored. And the interventions that have been implemented that actually even in the past 8 months have been bearing fruit, barring those, in spite of the fact that this one is a specific challenge. We will therefore as well move to deal with general backlog that the court is experiencing. I'm advised generally that in terms of the regional court approach, backlog cases are those cases that are considered to have been on the roll for more than 9 months in the regional court. And in terms of the district court, it's those cases that have been on the roll for more than 6 months. In this case, meaning that technically the backlog for district will have started in March, and for the regional court will only be in a position to tell the impact on the backlog starting in mid-April. The department is working on a plan and has a plan that is trying to address the general backlog that has been contributed to by a multiplicity of factors, including COVID, external factors as in like in the criminal justice system itself, that's the role of police and investigators, and other related challenges like load shedding. It should be mentioned as well, Chair, that as you recall in September, a situation that characterizes a vice major occurred, and that was a ransomware attack on the departmental system that went broadly to even affect generally the systems in the court, including the court recording technology. And it took us a period of just above 2 months for us to come back to be in a position to say we have recovered. So just that ransomware attack has had an impact as well, even on the statistics system that we use to be able to say with absolute certainty, these are the numbers that we have. And so that should be borne into mind and consideration. That also exacerbated the challenge that we were facing with regard to CRT. With that background, Chair, I'll ask that the colleagues then take us through the specific matters on the presentation, which will answer some of the issues that the Minister had referred to us. I will request my colleague here, DDG for Corporate Services, Konima Mecha, with the assistance of the acting CIO, to take us through the presentation, and immediately the colleague from Internal Audit and Risk, and followed by the head of Port Administration, Mr. Malema, will add the presentation on the other aspects. I thank you, Chair. Ms. Mamecha.
So thank you, DG. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Deputy Minister and the DG colleagues, good morning. Yes, the DG has already given the background, but I'll just take the committee through a detailed chronology of events on what was the delay, the cause of the delay in the procurement of the court recording system, and also on the impact of this non-functionality of that system on the court performance, and my colleague will deal with the has been put in place to deal with the court case backlog that was caused by, amongst others, the court recording technology non-functionality. Just in summary, Honorable Chair, the CRT support and maintenance contract that expired on the 21st of April. And in anticipation of that expiry, the department had put in place a plan to have the new contract renewed, to have the contract renewed by the end of March, as contained in the departmental procurement plan for the 2020-2021. However, due to many disruptions and delays, processes could not be completed in time as anticipated. And in the main, some of the reasons that has led to the delays can be attributed to the national lockdown as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, the non-existence of the Departmental Bid Adjudication Committee, personnel shortages and contract extensions negotiations not succeeding. To rectify the situation after that expiry, the department had embarked on a number of activities, one putting an interim support and maintenance via the existing contract between April 2021 and October 2021. And we had also requested for quotations via the digital transversal, which were mostly unsuccessful, as the DG has already alluded to. And eventually we had a permission from the National Treasury for a deviation of appointing a single source for a period of 12 months. And this is where we are in terms of that. I'm not going to belabor much on the importance of this court recording technology, because the minister had already alluded to that, and the DG also has alluded to that. However, it's safe to say that the court recording technology is implemented in all courts, and it has replaced the old system that we used to call Daylet system in 2015. So the company that had to develop this system and tailor make it for the department was awarded a contract in 2015, and they developed this system over a period of 2 years with support and maintenance for a period of 5 years, and that's what expired in 2021 April. Chairperson, I know it is not good for us to put the COVID-19 as one of the reasons. However, the reality is that indeed during that hard lockdown period, many employees were working from home for an extended period of time, and it came at a time when our employees, some of them, could not have the necessary tools of trade to effectively continue to perform their functions remotely from home. And also that, as a result of that, the convening of bid specification committee and bid evaluation committees were problematic, and more especially when we deal with issues of procurement, the documents are so thick that even if they had tools of trade working from home, they could not have been able to do it from home. What gave rise to the delay in finalizing the maintenance contract? For an extended period, the department did not have a bid adjudication committee sitting, and this was exacerbated by what I've just mentioned, the hard lockdown, COVID hard lockdown, which lasted until mid-June 2020, and as a result, there were minimal bid adjudication activities happening between 26 March and late June 2020. So as a result, the court recording technology maintenance procurement project was amongst those procurement initiatives that were affected. But since the bid adjudication committee activities resumed in 2020 July, the bid committee for CRT maintenance project and the bid specification committee and bid evaluation committees were approved. And a considerable number of officials were still working on a rotational basis, but they managed to convene some of these bid committees. Now, the DG has already alluded to the issue of personnel shortages in ISM. I'm not going to belabor that. And also the shortages of personnel in management as a result of the vacancies that existed. I'm not going to deal with that. But given the delays in experience with the process to procure a new service provider to maintain the CRT machines, the ISM unit then submitted a request to extend the CRT contract by 2 months. And the matter said that DBAC towards the end of March, and DBAC found that the quotation was not consistent with the original terms and conditions of the contract. And this now we are talking about the contract of data centrics that was in place for the past 5 years. Meta was then referred back to ISM for a discussion with the then service provider. A resubmission of the request was made, and regrettably the quotation was still not consistent with the terms of and the terms and conditions of the contract. Now, in terms of the supply chain management processes and the prescripts, it was not possible for them to extend that contract with different terms and conditions. And during that time, when the negotiations were carrying on, it expired that then the contract extend expired, and it was no longer necessary for the contract to be extended beyond its expiry. Now, what interim measures had been put in place to rectify the situation? Subsequent to the termination of the contract, the department requested a deviation from a normal tender process, the provisioning and maintenance of court recording technology, sexual offences court system, and the audiovisual remand system for a period of 6 months. And on the request for deviation letter, end user was specific that the services can only be acquired through the future contract 11A3, and that is the contract that the DG has alluded to, which was a bit problematic, hence that procurement could not be successful. But while that procurement process was underway, the department utilized an existing contract which was meant for the regional support services, which was awarded in February. Then we used that contract to, we extended the scope of that contract to maintain the recording technology from April to the 30th of October. So the first RFQ that we had to issue by July could not yield good results because the companies that bid it were found to be non-responsive due to a lesser footprint for the recommended bidder. And there was a second RFQ that was published in August, and that also could not yield results, good results, because the companies that bidded could not meet the required threshold in terms of the functionality. Now, during the engagement and consultations with other stakeholders, it was noted that the CETA contract RFB 1183-2014 are not accredited to, there are no companies that are accredited to render facilities, and it was also established that not accredited to this the CRT hardware. So then we then requested the National Treasury in November to exempt us from sourcing quotations under the CETA contract. And the National Treasury granted us that approval. And we then had to go back to the OEMs, the original equipment manufacturer, accredited service providers. So the third RFQ that was published in January 14, 2022, to 15 service providers who are OEM accredited on the closing date. Two service providers submitted their proposals. And the third service provider submitted only a letter. And it so happened that this service provider is the one that had developed the system for the past 5 years. And the two bids were evaluated and they were non-responsive. So we then had no option as the department, but other than to go back to the National Treasury to allow us to appoint a single source service provider in line with the National Treasury Note 3 of 2016 for at least a period of 2 months. And the request was approved by the National Treasury, and the company was appointed. But parallel to those 2 months deviation approval mentioned, the National Treasury was also requested to allow us to deviate from normal competitive bidding process by appointing a service provider on a single source basis for a period of 12 months, a period of not exceeding 12 months. And the National Treasury granted that approval. So currently, as we are speaking, the company, the very same company that has developed the system and maintained it for the 5 years at least, are now back in the space, given 12-month contract to help us with the code recording maintenance and support. So at the same time, we have started with the procurement process for at least a long-term process of 3 years, and we are now ready to go out on publication for that contract appointment. So what measures have been put in place to ensure that this does not happen again? DBEC has been appointed and are operating efficiently with the prioritized ISP procurement. We have also appointed a dedicated director at the director level, somebody at the director level in finance to focus on IT strategic procurement issues. And early warning systems in terms of contract management has been strengthened and to ensure that procurement items are started timelessly and are tracked until completion. And a departmental circular has also been issued that makes it compulsory for SMF members to participate in BSC and BEC committees. Now, there's also training of users in respect of basic understanding of the system and SCM. There's also a greater emphasis placed on skills transfer employees to be able to provide basic troubleshooting and repair of most common issues that to the court recording system. And the biggest lesson that we have learned out of this process is that the CETA transversal contract 11-83-2014 for CRT support and maintenance specifically cater for support and maintenance for our space, but rather it's the generic IT support and maintenance. Like the minister has indicated that this system was tailor-made for the department and is unique to the department. So it becomes very difficult for us to use the RT 1183 for CETA. And it hasn't been, that 1183 hasn't been updated for years, we are told. As the service providers listed are not accredited for supporting the CRT, and conversely, accredited service providers are not listed on that transversal. So it places a limitation on service providers to be restricted to only provide services in the province in which it is registered. So to overcome this problem, the department had to request CETA, like the DG has said, and not to use that transversal contract, but to go out on a tender relating to this. So in terms of the impact on the criminal court, the DD, the acting DDG for court services to take us through that presentation. Mr. Malema.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. I will deal with the impact of the entire process on the courts. But I want to start off by indicating that the backlogs as of 31st August 2021, they stood at 35,391. And this is historical, Chairperson. It's not, if you look at our stats in the AP over, you know, the last, we've been, say, averaging around 30,000, 35,000, 36,000. At one time, we got to 40,000 and we went back. So that's the number at which the department has been battling with backlogs. And obviously the ransomware attack also contributed to that. So we're still battling to put the IT systems back to draw the data that we want, but that is work in progress. The latest figures, conservative numbers of backlogs that has been we've been able to capture as of the 28th February, we stood at 40,106 cases nationally. Now, when you break down at the district courts, we are standing at 15,959. That is about 22% of the backlog in that division. And when you look at the regional courts, we are standing at 24,147. That gives us 64%. So you can see that the biggest backlogs in the country actually lies with the regional court. And as a consequence of that, that spills over to the sexual offences court, which stood at 12,557 cases at 31st March 2021. And when we move that fast forward to that to 31st December 2021, that figure has increased to 15,605. So that is the impact. Now, we have put our minds together, Chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, to look at the interventions that we will need to actually get around this problem. And so it's a number of areas that we have to look at to deal with this problem. So I've tried to categorize these areas broadly in terms of, first of all, the human resources, because our systems are largely by human resources. So we've put a plan that would see savings that we have to actually employ additional capacity, such as retired, experienced magistrates, prosecutors, legal practitioners, administrative staff, interpreters, foreign language interpreters, all the role players that we would need so that we can then create the backlog courts. At the same time, the judiciary is leading the process. I'm happy to report that we have very good working relationships with the heads of the chief magistracy, as well as the regional court presidents. The regional court presidents are leading in the committees that we call the regional efficiency enhancement committees that they have established, and the chief magistrates are chairing the DEC or the district efficiency enhancement committees, wherein all the role players at the district court or at the regional court sit together to really analyze the causes of the postponements and develop interventions that would be necessary. At national office, we've also developed a forum where the funding, the allocations, would then be made to support these interventions. Simultaneously, we've looked at the tariffs broadly as an organization, but specifically here, I'm mentioning tariffs for psychologists, psychiatrists, and intermediaries, because we need different reports. Intermediaries are very, very critical for us in the regional courts for purposes of assisting children. So we're doing a review of the tariffs. This is really meant to bring our tariffs up to standard so that we provide competitive rates. We've had a difficulty in sourcing some of the service providers because the rates were outdated. At the level of equipment, we will be looking at procuring additional mobile CRT machines. This is very important that we bring in this additional capacity of the mobile machines. It will enable us to free the space in the courthouse, in the courtrooms, and deal with some matters such as perhaps say, your civil, the family matters in chambers. So we can then free when we then set up the backlog courts. We are then in a position to have additional space. But at the same time, we'd look at the audiovisual equipment, like the ones that we're using, the technologies available. So this is largely plug and play that would be able to install in the courts so that you can then have virtual hearings. In fact, in some of the courts, the magistrate have already started doing that to have virtual matters. We have a policy in place that we are refining. The DJ has already taken the decision that the courts will be provided with pool cell phones and routers. So this will enable us to continue to connect when the system is down, so we don't have to be waiting. Further interventions that we've looked at relates to priority courts. We're taking a risk-based approach that looks at the courts with the highest risk, as in, you know, the biggest number of backlogs where, you know, children are involved, you know, that kind of thing. We've developed a priority list together with the chief magistrates and the regional court president. We've worked together with the regional head to identify those courts. We have given this list to the service provider. These are the courts that we should start with, and so that we're in a position to gain. We've also modeled our interventions in relation to what happens at the high courts, where they have continuous roles. This will enable us, especially in cases that involve multiple accused persons, so that you then schedule the matter for, say, a week or two. You know, then it allows you to actually finalize matters, as opposed to just putting up a matter that you know it will require. And this, I'm assuming that the matter is trial ready, it can then proceed. Overtime work has been proposed. The officials are ready to work overtime. Part-head matters, as I said, will be finalized as part of what we'll prioritize. Backlog courts, this will be established. I've already mentioned this. In some courts, specifically in Gauteng, I can mention that the judiciary has mentioned that they are willing to work on Saturday. So we will also look into you know, using that day so that we have Saturday courts to look at. And then eventually we are looking at client.
Mr. Malima, we have read the document. There's no need to go through plan by line.
All right. I'm actually almost at the end, Chairperson. We can go to the end of it by going to the slide on facilities. Because the issues also deal facilities, the Chairperson. Specifically, we would like to procure your UPS so that, you know, although we want to put up the generators, the water tanks, but we believe that the UPS, if we buy big enough ones, they are also plug and play. Especially for the smaller courts, would be able to procure those things and install them, but also professional people, because we want to, you know, struggle when we want to perform minor work. So we've spoken with Public Works; they'll give us a list of their professionals, but we'll also go out on tender and create our own list of pre-approved professionals, the architects, engineers, surveyors, you know, those kind of people where if you want to do minor works, you don't have to go to public works, but we know we have a list that is pre-approved, the rates are approved, they are belong to professional societies. In addition, we'd like to bring in artisans within our own environment, like your plumbers, your electricians, because we tend to have costs being postponed because of those small things, you know, there is water leakage, there's electrical faults. So the small things that the handy person can deal with. We've spoken with HR that will be creating positions, probably the cluster levels, bringing those people so that we don't waste a lot of time trying to source those service providers. And lastly, Chairperson, to conclude, there are issues around security that may also affect the functioning of the court that we'll also take care of in respect of doing, ensuring that the security provided for the judiciary, we do the assessments, we improve on physical security as well as installing the audiovisual equipment like cameras, and finally ensuring that we comply with the COVID-19 protocols and procurement of PPEs. And that would be it from me, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, with your permission, I'll ask the Chief Internal Audit Executive to immediately move in not more than 7 minutes, just cover his presentation.
Thanks, DG, and good morning, honorable members. My name is Max Buzeli. I'm the team leader at the internal audit. Thanks. We have prepared a very short presentation, which specifically focuses on the matter under discussion. The role of internal audit chairpersons to provide assurance and advisory service to accounting officer management, audit committee, and audit committee through applying a risk-based approach on risk governance control processes for ensuring that the departmental mandate and objectives are achieved in a cost-effective manner. And the external audit doesn't assume any management responsibility or role except for in the area of work of internal audit. I want to talk about the role played by internal audit in relation to CRT specifically. Chairperson, the department had issued a directive that bids which exceed a threshold of 10 million rand should be reviewed by internal audit prior to awarding as part of the risk mitigation measures. And that is done constantly with so many bids which are advertised in the department. So we review the specifications and the entire process that is also involved. With regard to the CRT, we reviewed the bids on three occasions. And in two instances, as has been highlighted earlier, the bids were found not to be non-responsive. And that was part of the conclusions which internal audit has reached, which was communicated to management. And that was also advising that due to the nature of the service and the agency, the consideration should be made to approach National Treasury and CETA so that there could be another dispensation that is being looked at, which the department has done as it was indicated here even by the minister. So in the said instance, which the DDG Corporate Services had referred to, specifications were also reviewed by internal audit and the terms of reference be published, which I believe that the department will be doing. So what will be happening in the in the future to ensure that the situation doesn't recur? But we know that at all times the department was aware, and they were also doing something about this contract, as it was also explained in the earlier presentations. So on a monthly basis, we are going to monitor key contracts on a monthly basis and also reporting the accounting of the EXCO on shortcomings until the environment is fully stabilized. And we are also going to continue to review the contract management processes and recommending improvements. And the last part, Chairperson, from us will be also to review these interventions which the department has put in place as part of dealing with addressing the impact of the non-functioning CRT and also the court performance. So we are going to be reviewing this on an ongoing basis and also ensuring that shortcomings which have been identified are also addressed. Chairperson, I also need to indicate that from our own assessment, yes, there have been challenges of personnel, as it was indicated even earlier, but the environment now seems to be improving, because even with our assessments that we are conducting, as the directive which I indicated that the department has put in place, we are seeing that there's some improvements, especially starting from the past 4 months, some interventions which the DG has implemented. So I think it will just be a matter of time that the whole environment has to function as expected. Thanks, Chairperson.
I'll ask the Chief Risk Officer to come briefly to cover the risk enterprise risk approach to these matters and what is being done going forward. Mr. Matango,
thanks, DG, and Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, good morning. As indicated, my name is Venile Matlangu. I also have got a short presentation to share with the committee in relation to the matter under discussion as to what risk management did and as a department, how we're going forward addressing the issues. The presentation covers the role and the issue at hand, the contract management risk as assessed, the mitigation that was put in place, and the interventions that the department has put in place going forward. As Enterprise Risk Management Department, informed by the Public Service Risk Management Framework, our role is to assist and support management to identify and monitor risks. Also to prioritize top risks in accordance to the exposure towards the achievement of outcomes and objectives as set out in the departmental strategic planning document. In as far as the matter under discussion, the CRG, this risk, with the as 2018-2019 financial year, it was identified and prioritized, put in the top strategic risk of the department up until the current financial year. The contributing factors in this space is informed by the instability within the supply chain management and ICT as a result of high staff turnover in that space of supply chain and ISM. The department became exposed in that area. We also experienced the unavailability of officials to serve as panel members of both this specification and evaluation committees as and when it was required to fast track the process of managing contract management in the department. These were the mitigation plans were put in place by the department and were manned in different trenches. I'm not going to read them through as I, most of them have been alluded to by the previous speakers. What I want to go to is what the department has put in place as of now moving forward. As the minister indicated earlier on that the structure of the department has been approved, addressing the issue of the high turnover and the issue that was raised by the DG to say the space of ICT was mostly manned by contract workers. I think the approval of this the structure of the department will assist in making sure that the necessary posts that are available are vacant at the senior level are filled. And in the space where the CRT resides, the CFO has already been appointed. That has been alluded to say with effect from 1st of April, she will be assuming duties. And this will assist the department in making sure that the CRT receives attention at that level. Secondment of skills personnel from other areas of the department supply chain to assist where need arises is also what the department is doing at this point in time and moving forward. The department will be communicating with different end users of contracts through their branch heads to ensure that from time to time they are given red lights in relation to the contracts that are coming to an end. The department is also updating a new contract monitor introduced by National Treasury, which moving forward will be amended effect from 1st of April 2022. The directive from the Director General will also assist to ensure that the committees are available in the department, specifically coming from senior managers of the department, so that the department ensures that justice is done to the contract management in the department. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, I won't take much time, but just to comment briefly on three issues I think that arose during the minister's presentation from the honorable members. And the minister has referred
to. I mean, I'll keep it there, I'll come there.
We need to upload them, no marketing cards.
Teacher, can I suggest that I think most of those issues will arise again through the questions. If they have not been asked, then you can answer them at the end of the question time. If I think let's allow members to ask those questions. If those issues that the minister raised have not been covered by the members, then you would have an opportunity to cover them.
Our attendance to you, Chair.
TJ?
I was saying that's in perfect order, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Horn, Honorable Janji, Honorable Mola, Honorable Nivot Strahans.
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you for those presentations. Firstly, Chair, in respect of the risk presentation we have received, it is acknowledged that the risks around contract management was identified as far back as 2018-19. And I must at the outset then say that it is inexcusable that we therefore find ourselves where we do find ourselves in respect of the CRT issue in general, but also contract management, or the CRT issue in specifically, but contract management in general, because it's quite clear that the way this has unfolded in respect of CRT, but also other issues, which I will point out in my questioning just now, cannot be described in any other way than serious maladministration and gross negligence on the part of the contract. And in that regard, at the outset, I also want to say the DG said that, if I understood him correctly, that in with the ransomware attack and the senior management vacancies, the department really faced something equal to, or he described as this major. Now, I wanted at the outset to say that comment cannot be accepted. I mean, this major is a natural occurrence, unexpected in nature, of a major impact. The only thing that's similar here is that this all had a major impact, but it was perfectly foreseeable, and it was not a natural occurrence. So please don't use that term. Secondly, Chair, a few uncertainties still remain in respect of where we find ourselves now with CRT. On the one hand, it's reported that there's a 12-month appointment, an interim or interim emergency measure, but still the feedback is, as we speak, courts and CRT and also the CCTV at sexual offences courts are not functional. So if that 12-month deviation appointment has happened, when do that service provider then come on board, and at what's the expected delivery date so that we can see some functionality? And then similarly, in terms of the longer contract, the presentation is not clear as to when do the department realistically foresee will a new service provider be appointed, hopefully well enough in time so that when the 12-month appointment runs out, we can see a smooth handover. Then, Chair, in respect of the general ICT issues, I've been informed that courts have been directed not to upload anything on the integrated case management system at this stage. Yet the presentation talks about, creates a picture, or sketches the picture as to that we're back to full functionality since the ransomware attack. So if that can be explained, it would be welcomed and helpful to the committee. Then in terms of the interventions, there was a few slides on the interventions, but it is also vague in the sense that nothing in the slides indicates to us by when these specific interventions, and specifically those that would deal with the backlogs, would be in place. So the question is, how far is this from reality? When these slides talk about making new magistrates, procuring mobile CRT devices. It all seems very much to be future plans. And I think at this stage, given the fact that, as was admitted, about 2 out of every 3 cutters in our regional ports are on the backlog roll, we need more detailed timeframes. This is now urgent and sort of an emergency in nature. Then, Chair, in respect of contract management, and this is my last point, we are assured that early warning systems are now in place. Contract management has been strengthened, is the terms used. And I must say, I find it difficult to believe, and those colleagues who were with me and you, Chair, on the inland leg of our oversight visits towards the end of January will understand why I say this. There we were in Mbombela, firstly at the magistrates informed that they were impacted heavily by the fact that the contract regarding their telephone systems and their ability to make outgoing landline calls were heavily impacted. And the frustrating aspect around this, that we've seen this, this is not the first time we heard of something like this happening. I would recall that just after the 2019 election, the whole of the Free State were impacted by the very same occurrence. And at that stage, we were ensured that, the department will look into a situation to prevent the reoccurrence. But yet, when we were at the Mbombela Magistrates Court on the 24th of February, we were informed that the very same thing occurred there. And then later on in the day, when we at the High Court, we were informed that on that specific day, the 24th of January, the contract for the security service was coming to an end. And Mr. Skosana, who I don't think he is on this call today, he was clearly taken aback. He was running around like a headless chicken. He assured the committee or the members of the committee with the emergency measures would be put in place to temporarily extend the contract. And then later on during the leg in Middelburg, when we again inquired, he ultimately admitted that no, nothing could be done. The contract had come to an end. And as a temporary measure, he then asked that security personnel from the regional court be placed at the High Court. And now all of this happened just after the fire at Parliament, just after the smashing of windows at the Constitutional Court. It is unfathomable that the list of this still be faced by contracts running out. So I must say, Chair, that's my last comment. I take note of a new tool that's to be implemented on the insistence of National Treasury from the 1st of April. But I do believe, Chair, we as a committee must insist on a dedicated briefing in the very near future where the specific system the department claim to be using now to ensure that contracts do not just run out, be put on the table, explained to us in a convincing manner. Because based on the evidence towards the end of January, I'm not convinced that the assurances the department give that contract management is now properly in place, that is the reality. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janje.
Nkosi Sihlalo. Thank you very much, colleagues from the department. With your 3 presentations, one extensive one and 2 short ones. And Chair, I will comment also on the short ones after I've read them and they were presented. I'm not wiser. Your internal audit and the risk. So I remain with the question whether they've answered the question or not answered the question, but I will speak to that at the end. I think where I want to start, Chair, and thanking the department, I want to start with the DG first, straight to the DG, because the DG remains a new person in his position. So the first thing I want to ask from the DG to share with us, get this response from the DG. That DG, when you came in as a DG not long ago, have you been able to do an assessment report on the state of the department that you found? Do you have that report, DG, that when you came in, Agirimosi, when others leave, there's a handover and all of that, but when you come in, you have to start from the point of understanding what you inherited, what you started. I would be interested if you can share whether has that exercise been done by you as a DG, because it is on the basis of what you compile in that report and assess that you begin to develop what is it that you think needs to be done, changed, improved, and so on. And I'm raising this as a critical thing. I will tell you why I also asked, because the information at our disposal says, Che, that as far back, and you were in another capacity then, perhaps Mr. Horn was also not here, as far back as 2011, SCOPA would have concluded about the crisis of vacancies in the SCM of this department. This is 2011. And so we are at 2022. I don't know if you can add another 11 there. To show that perhaps more than 11 years later, this is where we are. It's the same department, and that relates that relates to why I'm asking this question. So that the DG must be in a position to say it's been long coming if he has done that kind of an exercise. He also, DG, you touched on the issue. Which we understand in the space of the magistracy as the norms and standards. So Chief Justice Mogoeng, one of his legacies in 2014 was the introduction of what is called the norms and standards. You know, how courts are run operationally and so on. And that those norms and standards deal with a number of issues, including the fact that courts should have minimum 4.5 hours a day to sit, these case flow management issues, as well as this backlog issue of 6 to 9 months. So that is in the workbook of every stakeholder in court, that they need to adhere to those norms standards. And in the presentation, you could see some of those things being ventilated here. I'm raising the issue of the norms and standards because I think the secretariat must write this down. This is a question, this one you need to fully write it and not necessarily respond now. I don't see you being able to do that. On the backlog, Chair, I would be interested, Chairperson, that they give us a full report about the backlog that was there before April 2021. What was the backlog? Both in the two categories of 6 months and 9 months, as defined in the norms and standards. But I will be more also interested in terms of the backlogs that would have been there between April 2021, when the contract expires, until November, that 7 months period. So they share with us the backlog, but it's only when you have that you'll be able to be much wiser and make an intelligent conclusion about whether the performance is going backwards or it's going forward. As it is put here now, it's not helpful. It says nothing. You've got to compare it with something. That's how these things work. And I'm asking that we be given that. And I'm raising that in order to make the following point, Chair. what we're giving in the slides in terms of the backlogs of the 35,091 as well as the 40,106. And I'm going to use an Afrikaans word, Jano Engelbrecht can translate it. This is Dame Seich in Afrikaans. It is Dame Seich. The figures that were given as Dame Seich in Afrikaans. In other words, if Jano is slow, it is Samsa.
Yeah, making it up.
Yes, Samsa. This. Because they also say that they could not. It's possible to capture. So I can't rely on these figures. They admit in their presentation that we're not able to give us an accurate figure about this. And therefore, they, from where I'm sitting, they go back. I don't know how long it will take them so that we don't make decisions on wrong information that is presented in front of us. We were at a different space as this oversight committee. So I just want to make that. And then, Chair, on the early warning systems in the department, can the DG and his team share with us? Do you have, I've asked this question to the minister. He has not answered it, left it to you. So the chair said, we will repeat this. I'm repeating this. You have a list of contracts that will expire. Can you share with us the list of contracts that will expire in this list? You have a department that I want to assert, and the minister admitted as such. This department is consultancy and contract reliant. You're relying on consultants to do the most critical work, this heartbeat of this department, and on contract. The minister admitted on that, in terms of that, that the systems are on contract basis. You can even take an example of the ransomware attack, because the issue there is that you did not have internal capacity of the department to do that. In fact, when there was a problem, they had to go back to those people who installed that, and you don't know if they were responsible for the attack, to come and assist them, okay, to correct that. They've admitted here on this issue that even on this 12-month thing, they had to go back to the designers' check. It is the designers, even on this code recording, it's the designers, i.e. internal capacity. So this then begins to speak to your recovery plan. And so for them to produce a recovery plan, they must source out, they must go back. Now, quite clearly, from where I'm sitting, this is not sustainable. It's not sustainable to have a department of this nature that's reliant solely so much on this kind of an outside service. It's costly. There are no skills being built. And so it is a problem that is going to be going there in perpetuity in the manner that it is going. So let me turn this question again. I've asked it to the minister. He responded. You came back very nicely, Chair, to the minister. I don't think that the minister gave us the kind of answer we wanted. You said we're going to have another session. But I want to pose this question to the DG and his team, based on minister's response. So here is the question. Why was the minister only told in November? Why was the minister only told in November? That's what he said, late November, December, about a contract expired in 2021. Can you please just assist me? I have an answer from the minister, so don't go back there. The minister said he was told by this department in November. And so for 7 months, you did not tell the minister that the contract expired in April. For 7 months, you did not tell the minister everything else that you are telling us here. This on project basis, this kind of contract. It seems you would have told the minister, because the minister needed to take something up with CETA, from what I'm hearing. And the chair asked the question to the minister, the regularity of his sessions with risk management team and the senior management team, and the minister answers quarterly. You know that in 7 months there are two quarters. In 7 months, two quarters. So there are two quarters where you've not told the minister if those quarterly meetings did take place about this particular issue. And so I'm not asking a question there. I think I'm asserting, Chair, based on what we have received also from the minister. This is an impression that we have. You told us that. And so the question now is for you to help us understand, why did you sit on a problem? Because if we're to speak about consequent management, should the minister not start with you as the head of department DG on this consequent management, on the basis that you only told him in November about a problem that would have affected and created a lot of financial problems, costs that could have been avoided, a problem that has created backlogs, a problem that made people to pay double for their cases because they were postponed? Should consequent management not start with you from the minister, just based on this? Let alone, I'm going to raise further consequent management in this manner, just to go to the internal audit. The internal audit say in the main, the service they provide, Chair, is advice. The service they provide is advice, fair enough. Because from the DG, DDGs and all of these chief directors, you have people who are highly paid to think. They are not paid to run around. They are highly paid to think. This is why we're paying them so much. They don't dirty their hands on many things, because we want this strategic advice from the DG, from the DDG, from the chief director to the director. And so that's why they are called SMS. It's not just a sexy thing. The reason why you are categorized as this layer in the department. So with internal audit, they seem to, from their presentation, it's very, I must say, Chair, with due respect, I don't know what they advise on. From their presentation, I can't pick up what they advise on. Clear that whatever they advise on, they gave a very brief advice and the problem is big. So you can just compare this. Your limited advice that you gave is overshadowed by this kind of a problem, because I want to ask this risk, this internal audit, what was their actual advice? If they do their work on a quarterly basis, what was their actual advice on this issue? And as we sit here, what is their advice on the reliability of this recovery plan, if there is a plan? Because they've got to look at that and see it. And on the chief risk officer, I must just say, Chair, it's going to be difficult to engage with this because it is as limited as the internal audit. It's not helpful. Because when you say you introduce monthly reminders on the contract management to those responsible, that's what the chief risk officer is saying in the presentation. I am interested, therefore, Chair, to go beyond that and say, okay, show us this schedule. This is the spreadsheet where you were saying here is a risk identified. These are the actions and mitigating matters. And therefore, as part of mitigating, this is what you needed to do, the responsible kind of a unit. Because that's where consequent management comes in, Chair. If a unit has been advised by the risk officer that you needed well in time to have relook and renew the contract, and that unit has not done that, then somebody must act on the head of that unit. We don't have that information. He has it. Because what has been presented to us is a hidden information. It's not even high level. It's not even high level. You can't make sense of what we were said here, because you've got to present something to us so that we're able to question you as the chief risk officer, but also from there to then say, if you've done your work properly, this person has not done his or her work. This is not helpful. We're not able to get that. My second question on the risk, it's the issue of the functionality of this risk register. I'm no longer interested in risk registers being produced and so that they become sharp tools. They come and be presented here. The rest of a risk register is its functionality. If it's not functional, it is useless. It's irrelevant. You might as well not have it. And so from where I'm sitting, I am still to listen to a presentation by the chief risk officer to basically tell us where things went wrong, what did he do to advise those he needed to advise, and if he did, what happened, what actions were taken about those people. And my last point I want to make, not as a question, but as a next action by this committee, that we are going to need as a committee chair to roll back and bring back the issue we raised, that we think this department needs to be assisted by the Public Service Commission. So I'm raising that we find time in our own space to discuss that and make a concrete decision in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chanke. Honorable Ngola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Kiangi and Mr. Horn have covered a lot of aspects as it relates to this report. I think there is no use for us being repetitive about issues, but just two pointers. I think partly Mr. Kiangi has raised this thing of the case backlogs, which is reported to have increased between the time at which the CRT machines were not working. So with these numbers and the report that there has been a ransomware attack in the department, I'm not quite sure about the accuracy of these numbers. I want to show on record that the department must say, are these numbers accurately how the backlog has increased during this period of the CRT problem? The last issue, Chair, that I would like to raise, how has this, what the DG calls the instability, how has it impacted in the spending of the department, particularly on two programs, compensation of employees and court services? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mola. I think you forgot to raise the issue of Kaiser Chiefs.
Maggie, it's divisive, so I had...
Okay. No, but if Chiefs can only play Pirates, then you can win the league and no other team. Just play Pirates. Honorable Nivot Drachens.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Greetings to everyone. the Honourable Janki covered me with regard to the questions that I wanted to ask, but I still want the opportunity to repeat some of those questions, because in listening to this presentation, I don't really get the sense of urgency. I don't get a sense of urgency and the seriousness of what has been happening, especially with regards to the courts that my colleagues visited. And the question I wanted to repeat here was the contracts that are expired in April 2021. The minister only knew 6 or 7 months later about that contract. And this, I would like to know why. Why did the department, the Risk Management Committee, not keep the minister updated during those 7 months? Why did this not happen? And I really want to know, and I really want an answer to that, because I'm concerned about what happens in future and the risk management and the things that will happen in future. Then also with the ransomware attack, I want to know what was put in place to make sure that ransomware attack or security breaches does not happen. I remember the last time of some of the previous meetings that it was just said, sorry, it cannot be divulged because it's a security issue, but I'm not convinced. I'm not going to accept it as is. If the committee doesn't know whether future ransomware and security breaches will be prevented in future when the courts are being breached and the security is being breached, we need to know what is put in place. As a committee, we need to know this. And then also, Honourable Janki raised the issue as well. I mean, I think this has been so many times and raised so many times. So maybe it's time for the commission, for the committee to get the PSC, the Public Service Commission, in and talk to us about their perspective on this issue of the staff issues within this cluster, especially this committee. We really need to look at that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nebot Johan, Honorable Namathemba Maseko Jele.
Chairperson, I think, Chairperson, I'm covered, but with all that Honorable Janki has said, in fact, even the tone in which he has put it, it really made me, you know, that Chairperson reminded me of two things. When we started in 2019 or 20, when we still had that our previous DG, I remember, Chairperson, when we raised the issue of saying it looks like our leadership within the department are on holiday. We are paying people to be on holiday. They are really not doing the job. Because, Chairperson, these problems up to this far, where we are now, at least we should have been somewhere. You know, when Honorable Janki was mentioning 2011, I just shivered, Chair, because indeed, these problems are long-standing. And, Chairperson, I feel that we are supposed to pass the stage where, in our language, we're going to say, you know, this thing of talking nice with people. People should know that when we come to the committee, it's money. It's been paid for. When you come to job every day, we need to know people, what are they doing when they come to, we're not paying people to just to move from their houses to come to work and just sit there, use telephones and use the money, the government money. We are paying people to do the job. I was about to ask the issue of the internal audit, the issues of risk. You know, all this thing is lying on the advice that they give. Are they being honest to the department? Are they being honest to us, Chairperson? Because the advices that they have been given, we should have been given now the presentation that says, indeed, like Honorable Janki said, tell with me,
It's like you're saying, with me, told them on this day, and this is a proof. And they did not do 1, 2, 3. And I told them to do this, and they did not do it. We were going to say now, who did? Because we really want the culprit here. We won't be able to pass this thing if we don't get the culprit. We can't be talking issues at the level, at the high level. We have to go to the root of the problem. Where is the problem? Why can't we get this thing right, Chairperson? We'll be coming here and be told every day. Honorable Janji was asking, I think I agree with him, asking the DG that when did the DG give us his plan? Did he make an assessment when he joined the department? He did, Chair. I remember very well in one meeting, when he was doing presentations in terms of his assessment to the department, I even asked a question. I said, Chairperson, it looks like to me, this presentation that we're getting today, we are not going anywhere. It's like we are starting afresh. Only to find that all the issues of 2011, they're still not covered. Because if we don't resolve those issues from that period, we won't be able to go forward. So this tomorrow will be coming here again. So my question to the risk, the risk management, are you being fair? Are you really giving the advice that is needed to the department for us to be able to deal with these issues? That is the question that I would want to hear from them again, Chairperson. And then also the question of the timelines. I repeat again, Chair. I think I have to repeat this one. We want the timelines. We want them when they come and say this problem was identified here. The DG must tell us it was identified on this date, and on this date, it is where we are. We have done 1, 2, 3. Let's not come here back again, Chairperson, and talk about these issues. Because the presentation of the audit, Chair, they are saying to us now, monthly, no, from now onwards, we will do this thing, advice, I will follow up our advices and whatever, on monthly. What have they been doing previously? Because they are... To me, it's like they are the core of this department. So, Chair, let people be fair. We are paying here. We want money, value for money. We don't want to pay people to come and sit in their cushy offices and what. Even if you can go under the tree and join Honorable Ngola there. But as long as we'll be able to do the job, we'll be happy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
No, Chair, I won't enter the provocation of under. There is only one matter, Chair, that I think I omitted. Sure. Apologies for Ugu Ngena and Puma. You know, DG, we don't take kind to any department that reports to this committee and try to make the COVID-19 period a scapegoat. We are saying this, Department of Justice, that yes, indeed, in the country we had an unfortunate COVID-19 ravaging our people in the country. Yes, indeed, COVID-19 did bring a certain different way of working in government and even in the private sector. But it can never be a blame game to COVID that we were unable to do things properly. It can never be correct that we're going to hide our incompetence behind COVID. I'm saying this, Chair, because this committee they are appearing before operated and filled vacancies in the South African Human Rights Commission during COVID time. This committee they are appearing before, Chair, filled vacancies in the information regulator. a process that required a serious time and a serious commitment to it, starting from the advert to public comments, interviews, screening, and all that. We have done that within time during COVID. So we don't take kind to any department that comes to us and want to say, ah, COVID this, COVID that, COVID this. Because we know from the experience of this committee, we operated under these conditions. There was no different COVID that affected the Department of Justice that did not affect this committee. Chair, it is a well-known fact that government provided all resources and all systems for government departments to proceed during COVID. So the fact that employees do not have the tools of trade can only be blamed to the Department of Justice. Even students had tools of trade. The president in his address, Chair, clearly spoken about emergency procurement for tools of trade for employees of government to work during COVID time. So COVID did come. It did ravage all of us. It ravaged the world. But it can't be a tree where we hide when we have not done what we're supposed to have done. Fortunately, Chair, from us, I'm not boasting. I'm making an example about us having done ABCD during the same time. So, Chair, I want to say to the department, humbly and respectfully, next time no one is going to be allowed to come before the committee and want to blame COVID over non-performance. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ngoda, the teacher.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, I'll ask the colleagues before I come in to deal with the specific issues that raised, particularly maybe starting with the colleagues from internal audit and risk to come and deal with those risk matters. And Mr. Malema from Court Administration to specifically deal with the issues around courts and the accuracy of the statistics, particularly in the light of the ransomware attack. And maybe we were earlier remiss, Chair, not to have mentioned the fact that one of the longest serving senior managers of the department in the form of Advocate Davis Kosana has filed up for public service took retirement at the end of February. We have, however, secured these services at the South African Law Reform Commission as a full-time commissioner to assist there in terms of the review of the Criminal Procedure Act of 1927 as amended, which we hope before this this sixth parliament rises, will be able to adopt a brand new Criminal Procedure Act that will take into account all the developments, particularly even in terms of the use of technology. So I needed to make that point that the Honorable Horn had wondered whether it was yet. So he's no longer in the service of the department as a public servant. I'll come back to the other matters for Dirijima Mecha and the acting CIO as well to deal with the other related matters. Mr. Masan, I yield to you.
Thanks, Bichi, and thanks, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. On the issue of risk management, in as far as the advice that the risk management is providing the department, without being defensive, or citing an excuse, it's the issue of for the better part of the operation of enterprise risk management, the function was not residing within the office of the PG for quite some time, up until the current financial year, where the accounting officer indicated that the function needs to be within the office of the PG so that the advice could be close to that office. However, the advice that we have been given, honestly, so it was to the branches as and when the risk profiles were reviewed in different units branches, the mitigation plans advice that we give were always appearing in those documents. And on the issue of the CRT, having indicated that earlier on to say the issue of communicating with the service providers in terms of indicating the lapses of contracts, it's not necessarily coming from the risk management. I said the department through supply chain management. As of now, we have established, the department has established established the unit that specifically deals with contract management. Then contract management will be issuing those reminders to.
Chair, I beg for your indulgence. I saw a message on the screen that the Honourable Nivot Trachin was missing some of our responses. I'm not sure whether the host has addressed that matter.
No, thank you very much. Honourable Nivot Trachin, are you sorted?
Not yet, Chair. Not yet. Still cannot pin. I can't use the pin functionality.
Committee Secretary, can you assist?
Yes, Chair. I'll just make the honourable member a co-host. Then she will have all the functions. Because if I make allow her, she doesn't. It's just the issue of the system. I'll assist her.
Can you give me 1 minute so that she does not miss anything to do that?
It's sorted, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, teacher.
Thanks, DG, and thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Yeah, I was just indicating that as of now, within the current financial year, now the function is now operating within the office of the DG, whereby the advice will be coordinated from that side. But up until this current financial year, the information or the recommendations that were coming from enterprise risk management were residing within the branches in relation to the CRT issue. Since 2018-2019, as I indicated, it has been identified. The mitigation plans were cited with the unit in terms of mitigating the whole challenge around the space. Thanks, Jefferson.
I'll ask the internal audit to come in and deal with the matters as well.
Thanks, DG, and thanks, Honorable Jefferson and Honorable members. Internal audit, the internal audit function is prescribed in terms of how it should conduct its business. And I want to indicate that we provide assurance and advisory services on risk management, controls and governance processes to ensure that the departmental goals and objectives are met. So, Chairperson, there are processes that are involved which we undertake to do that, and every time when we perform assessments, we also provide recommendations so that improvements can be made. I also need to indicate that when it comes to CRT, we reviewed, as it was indicated earlier, that there's a directive by the department to make sure that all contracts or bids in excess of 10 million should be reviewed by internal audit. So the
engagement with the department did with National, I think, also in the CETA, was also part, emanating also from the work that internal audit performed. On the part of the recovery plan, Chairperson, what I've observed is that some of the work that the interventions that are there, the department has already implemented that. I think it was pointed out. What was missing was maybe to just show timelines in terms of what has already been done and what still needs to be done. And I also need to indicate that in terms of the work that we do, as I've indicated, that is prescribed, we are required and expected to be objective and also independent, and also raising matters without being afraid of consequences. I think I should also need to indicate that from the risk management perspective and also from internal, according to my assessment, the accounting officer and management are very supportive, and we are able to raise those matters. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. I'll ask Mr. Didiji Mameja to deal with the issues that they tend to have, as the acting CIO as well will come over.
Thanks, Didiji, and thanks, Honorable Chair. On the issue that was raised by Honorable Horn in terms of the 12-month contract, I can state that the 12-month contract is already on the site. They have started already with about 417 calls that were logged regarding the non-functionality of the CRT. And they've already assessed about 395 of those and fixed about 161 of those cases. However, some of the cases would require that the hardware should be replaced. So they've already ordered that hardware. In terms of the COVID-19 us having given that as a reason for the delays, I would like to state that in SCM processes, due to their confidentiality and sensitivity of the documents that colleagues have to deal with, it was almost impossible that they could run that process from home because of the confidentiality and the thickness of the documents that they would see. So I'm just saying that is the reason why we have also stated COVID as a reason in that regard. Thank you. I will hand over to the acting CIO.
Thank you. Good morning, members. I'm just going to add on what Ms. Mamecha was saying, and in the process address a number of questions from Honorable Gianti and Honorable Owen as well. So as the DDG was saying, the 12-month extension is already underway. The process was a little bit slow due to the prolonged period that there was of no support. So the first step that needed to happen was for an assessment to be done so that we can actually establish the extent of the damage and what is required to fix that. Once that was done, or at the same time, while that was happening, there needed to be some structures put in place. As you can imagine, during the time that the contract expired up until the time that the appointment was made, a lot of the subcontracting engagements also lapsed, and there was no resource even on the service provider side that had to be put in place. That has for the most part now been dealt with, and with effect from next week, in fact we finalize it this Friday, there should be all these administrative requirements should be dealt with by the service provider in the back end. But that doesn't mean work has not happened. Since the beginning of February, we have spent some time doing the assessment, and we have dealt with some of the issues that we could at the time, but most for the most part, these are dealing with hardware replacements, which had to be ordered, and the turnaround time for ordering hardware and getting it on site is between 4 and 6 weeks. But this thing that has already been ordered is starting to trickle in at the moment. So what we're expecting to happen is during the next weeks or two, we will finish the backlog, the priority backlog calls. Like the DDG was saying, it's about 460 calls. There's 250 outstanding. In the next 4 to 6 weeks, we should be able to finish that. At the same time, how we are dealing with that, we're meeting in daily meetings, in fact, to deal with any escalations that come up as part of that process, as well as any new requirements that come up to be able to deal with that. We also have weekly meetings with the service provider's executive team. They are fully on board supporting the process to make sure that we deal with the backlog as quickly as possible. And on a weekly basis, we also meet with court services to provide feedback and solicit input in terms of where we can optimize the process of actually dealing with the backlog. As far as the long-term process is concerned, it has already been started. It has already been quality assured by internal audit. It is ready for publication. There was a question that was asked, realistically, how long would this process take, or when do we expect the process of appointing a new service provider for the three years period? Where we are right now, from our side as the department, the specifications is ready for publication. There is a few issues that the bid spec committee, it was identified last week, that they need to deal with. But from then, it will go to CITA. As we have learned during the process, that doing it outside of CITA doesn't really work. So it will be published by CITA. And as part of that process, they will obviously do their own checks and balances. And that can take up to 3 weeks as per the feedback we received. After that, they will then publish it for a maximum of 21 days, etc. Realistically, I foresee that this process should be concluded, all things being equal, by the end of June this year, where we should have a new service provider ready to take over from the current service provider and actually start dealing with the issues. So one of the other issues that were raised is that it's maybe not clear as to what the plan is going forward. So our focus for the next few weeks, 6 weeks actually, is to finalize the phase 1 to 3. What we did with the initial engagement was to look at priorities, item issues, not court houses, but per court, and we've identified 460. And those were divided into three phases, of which phase 3 actually started last week. So what we now need to do is to finish phase 1, 2, and 3. As I said, the hardware delivery are the majority of the issues, and those are starting to trickle in. We should have that finished as a first priority. Then we need to finalize the structures that are required for the longer term, the 12 months period. That means onboarding more subcontractors in each province, ramp up the resources from the service provider, especially on the hotspots and the major courts. That last time there were like 42 major courts, high volumes, and we need to ramp up the resources at those specific courts as well. We also need to look at, and we're currently busy doing that, looking at the turnaround time for the repairs of equipment. So as part of this assessment that happened was, you would go to a court, you would find that, for instance, a recorder is damaged, but it doesn't have to be replaced. So part of that would be to ship it. At the moment, it's being shipped back to Pretoria, where there's a workshop where it's being repaired, the data is being checked, and the likes. That process takes quite some time. We need to look at how we streamline that. And another option that we're looking at the moment, working with the service provider, is to look at Woodstock. So once the equipment that we've ordered comes, each technician will go to site with already the basic equipment that is needed, like mics and headphones, those things that we know that normally breaks. Get that in his boot so that when he encounters something like that, it's not a matter of shipping. It's a matter of it's there, do with it, and then request a replacement from that way on. As part of that, we also can look at increasing the number of stock locations. Once the equipment is actually here, We will then subdivide the equipment into various pockets in different areas in the province as opposed to a single place where the equipment is stored and then shipped from. That will then reduce the turnaround time of actually dealing with the backlog and providing us effective turnaround time going forward. What we also need to do is, one of the things that we picked up is we need to provide alternative solution for ports when they are down. We have so far is deployed 147, I think, mobile recorders. We need to beef that up. Part of the procurement that we are busy doing is to actually increase that number so that we can at least have some form of backup facility in the event that the system goes down. Because at the moment, the bigger problem that we have is that some of these recorders are full, and because there was no maintenance support, we couldn't really maintain it. But now for the next 6 weeks, we'll look at those recorders that are full, get the data off so that we can actually effectively move around to where it is needed when a site is down. It will also help with clearing up the backlog, because there will be less of a downtime in these events. And then the last part of what we need to do in the next 6 weeks is to look at how do we capacitate our internal resources. We have what we call IT coordinators that are across the country. With the service provider do some level of training in terms of troubleshooting and dealing or fixing the basic issues that we get, like passing of UPSs and the lights. That will help us to actually keep the lights on going forward. I think those were the issues. There was also an issue, from Honorable Newell Drashan around the ransomware attack and what we have done in that regard. So since the ransomware attack, we have rebuilt, there's another question that I'm still going to deal with at the same time. We have rebuilt all our infrastructure. What happened was, as you all know, that some of our infrastructure were encrypted. We set that aside and we rebuilt all the functionality on what was left. Inadvertently, that then means that we now have less capacity to provide a full functionality, which then impacts on performance per se. But everything is up and running. I think there was a question around courts being instructed not to upload onto ICMS. I think the capacity issue plays a role in that. As a department, in the next this week, we're expecting the hardware to replace all the infrastructure. And then in the next 3 to 6 months, we should become back into full operations as far as our infrastructure is concerned. But back to the ransomware, so like I said, we have rebuilt our infrastructure, outdated on a limited infrastructure. We have upgraded our firewalls. We have upgraded our antivirus solutions to the latest version. We have upgraded our proxies. We have also implemented what we call a security incident and event monitor management tool, which basically tells you when someone attempts to get into your environment, and you can then track as to where that attempt is going, for lack of a better word. Going forward, we are also looking at strengthening it by way of implementing a security operations center. Part of our problem, one of the risks that we're identifying, obviously, is the hardware. It stretches across not just the data centers. So part of what we're going to do in the 2022-2023 financial year, which we started in this financial year already, is to actually deal with those hardware issues, the like of compute, laptops, desktops, the site servers that are falling about, switches and all of that. That's processes that are currently underway and should be concluded in the 2022-2023 financial year. We have also started an engagement with CSIR to do a vulnerability assessment externally, an independent vulnerability assessment on our systems. We would want to do that in the next month or so, depending on their availability. And then again in 6 months to see if there have been any movement after the ransomware and 6 months later. We are also in the process of reviewing our business continuity plan. For the most part, the overall business continuity plan is ready for approval, but we still need to delve deeper into how do we deal with the over-reliance in terms of IT in the event of a similar incident happening. What are the processes that we need to put in place per branch, per system, for something like this to allow us to still continue our operation?
Thank you very much.
Honourable, before we deal with the substance of court administration, I'll ask the acting CFO and the two colleagues and the colleague who is chair general coordinating our war room response to the challenges around contract management, which Mr. Shole. It is a colleague that the honourable members, Mr. Shole is coordinating a team of colleagues that we have to bring in as a war room, part of the war room, to specifically try to clean up our contract register. I think I can be honest with the honourable members in my own chair, that sometimes as part of management, we got colleagues to come and tell us about the state of our contract, and at some point we're given an assurance that there were no contracts expiring, and that was in September. And lo and behold, in December, mid-December, we were literally on the brink of somehow a system collapse of the department because of a sudden avalanche of contracts that were expired. And we had to engage Treasury for assistance, and we managed to have Treasury assist us with a quite number of contracts that would have brought challenges to us. And that's when we set up this war room task team that is basically dealing with these matters. We got the colleagues from our provincial offices to come to head office, and they have been here the past 3 to 4 months, and we have really seen spin-offs and the message far, because you need to deal with these issues of contract management and the dashboard. If you can come, please, Mr. Shole. So the acting CFO, who also had to come in and assist Mr. Mtem, was the acting CFO prior. They will deal with some of these related matters, particularly in terms of the way ahead on contract management.
Yes, please, over to you.
Thank you. Afternoon, Chairperson. I'll be dealing with the issue on the contract that are about to expire. But before I do that, I think I will take us through all the contracts that we currently have. From the exercise that we're currently busy with in terms of trying to ascertain exactly where the department stands in terms of all the contracts that we have, what we've since established is that we've got 3 contracts that are currently in place. Out of these 8 contracts, we've got 22 that are still valid. But out of those 22 contracts that are still valid, we've got 3 that are going to expire in the current year. The other one expiring is July 2022, October and September 2022. Those are the 3 that are going to now expire in the immediate future. The others are still valid and will expire in 2023 and 2024. Now, out of those 38, we've got 16 contracts, which are the problematic contracts, including the CRT that we've been discussing, which have expired and with no long-term contracts that have been in place. But even on those that have expired, what we have tried to do is to put in our interim solutions while we are trying to now deal with getting the long-term contract in place. So those are the 16, including the CFT. I don't know if the chair would want me to go through each and every contract.
You can provide that in writing.
But that is in terms of the status of the contracts, but that's where we are sitting at the current moment. But it's an ongoing exercise that we're still trying to update this register so that it is complete and accurate as we can possibly get it. Thank you.
Mr. Shole.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, DG. Good morning, colleagues. I think the CFO, I think CFO has already spoken to the issue of identified. So as we came in December, we had to start really and identify critical projects that would have meant that the department would have granted to a halt.
and we identified these 16 priority projects that we then started, firstly by interacting with National Treasury in some of these instances, in obtaining the necessary extensions and deviations so that the department does not grant you a hold. And once was that in place, we had to now start with the long-term assessment in terms of, or long-term putting into place long-term solutions. So we have divided this project into what we can do in the interim and what would be the long-term solution. So definitely on a weekly basis, we sit and we look at where we are with these particular processes. The Departmental Bid Adjudication Committee is on board on these particular instances where they are also sitting on Saturdays and on Sundays in order to ensure that there is movement in this particular long-term solutions. The Internal Audit Division has also cut down in terms of their times for review from about 2 weeks to getting us the external assurances in about a week or so. So there are a number of projects that are at the award stage from this particular 16 projects. What then happened in February was that we hit a snag in terms of projects that were in the BSC stage that were not yet advertised due to the constitutional judgment that was ruling, that had a ruling on the preferential procurement policy framework as it was in place. We then had to go back to National Treasury, which engagement we had on Monday to say there are these that we had already intended or were already in the pipeline, and this will actually affect our business. And from that particular engagement, we have agreed with National Treasury that we need to write to them and request extension from that particular PPR 2017 process so that they can be able to move forward with this particular 16 projects as we had implemented them. Thank you very much, DG.
Before I complete this track, I'll ask Mr. Mthembu, who was the acting chair for the department, and it was mainly really in terms of senior management, the last man standing in that branch. There were vacancies. The current acting chair was just appointed in November, and immediately after a month had to step in and assist as the acting CFO. And Mr. Shole is the acting chief director for supply chain, but Mr. Mthembu really has been holding the fort from that difficult period in August 2020 until sometimes the end of October or beginning of December 2021. Mr. Mthembu, there are some issues that you may wish to cover.
There is a microphone on your left.
No, thanks, DG. I think I don't have a lot to say, except that I think the measures that are being put in place by the current team are a step towards the right direction that could also assist us in resolving the issue of contract management in the department. I think also the measures that have been put in place in terms of improving our procurement turnaround processes will definitely also assist in improving and nipping this challenge of lack of effective and efficient contract management in the department. But in general, DG, there is a close relationship and a chairperson between our procurement processes, how we manage them, and how best we manage our contract and the issues of capacity during the period when I was acting were a true reality. And we tried everything in our power to make sure that, I mean, we keep our lights on. And indeed, there would have been areas that were in our blind spot. But I do believe that with how the department has been moving in terms of filling senior management positions, indeed, it would bring about the much needed stability, particularly in finance, but also in SEM. But I do want to mention, DG and Chairperson, that the SEM structure is a work in progress, because until we properly you know, structure our SAM and capacitate it. Issues around procurement processes as well as contract management may indeed be the issues of the past. But I also wanted to provide a response, DG, in the question that was raised regarding the impacts of the delays in contract management, procurement management, as well as HR. How have they affected the spending on compensation of employees, but particularly also on core services? And my response would be so generic that with every delay in implementation of planned, you know, projects and activities, they will definitely affect the department's budget and expenditure performance. On compensation of employees, roughly, we are currently sitting at just under 400 million anticipated underspending. Partly for the department, I think we are just sitting just under 200 million, and a big share, I would say, using the dump stack, because I don't have the figures right now with me. Compensation of employees, the 200 million or just under 200 million, about 50% to 60% of that underspending on compensation will mainly be attributed to court services, and for a very obvious reason, because the biggest share of our compensation budget sits within court services. But in terms of ICT procurement, per se, and the CRT in particular, that would not really affect court services, but would affect Program 5, our auxiliary services, because that's where most of this is a budget is sitting. But I think with what has been put in place in the past, the CRT impasse did not affect our expenditure that much, but I think the impact would only have been felt in the current financial in terms of slow spending, because there would have been a period where we may have not had assets at all supporting this contract. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to mention that I think in this area there was just a direct correlation between the instability that we mentioned at the top echelon of the department. So the Chief Financial Officer being the head of the branch finance, supported by four chief directors, which all the other three were vacant with the exception of Mr. Mtembu that was available. And the consequences that was below as well with vacancies of directors meant that the responsibility that they had here was heavily affected. And the appointments that we've done, the new chief director, two new chief directors have been appointed in the current year under review. And also just to mention that in that respect, just a feeling of vacancies. We've discovered that it was a very laborious and very difficult process that we tried to reduce from a span of about close to 6 months that it will take from job evaluation until the person is appointed. We tried to reduce it by 50% to at least 3 months, and that has not been easy. But as we'll show later, we managed to fill a lot of these critical positions, particularly in that respect. And generally, in terms of the supply chain processes and the committees that were required, we had to take a decision and give an instruction that only senior management members could sit in this committee. But immediately when we did that, we also got exposed because the majority of the vacancies as well were at that level and strategic level. But historically, there was no culture of senior managers in the department being expected to play a role. So what we found was that critical matters and very, very expensive contracts were expected to be evaluated or specified by, and maybe to an extent, been adjudicated
by people who were not in senior management. And since we have taken that decision, we have seen a lot of improvement. But generally, there was also some form of reticence and reluctance on the part of the senior managers of the department to participate in general procurement processes. And I think we have had to take a decision to say any form of non-participation will have to be deemed as a misconduct. And we have seen really senior managers coming in. And so as part of that response of the war room I was talking about, I must say this space is being stabilized and in the next 3 months, we are really seeing, I think with the identified 16 contracts, I think the interventions in the short term that have been made have allowed us to implement measures that will ensure that in the next six months, we'll be able to be out of the current morass of this historic, ineffective and inadequate contract management system. And with those that we are seeing that are expiring this year, we should be able to be at least having contractors or service providers appointed at least 3 months before the expiry of contracts. I want to thank the colleagues and ask Mr. Malema to come and deal with the matters pertaining to the backlog and the colleagues dealing with our national operations plan, dealing with our system statistics, Mr. Zoleka, to come with Mr. Malema so that that issue of the accuracy of our statistics as well can be covered.
I hope you're rounding up, teacher.
Yes, with your indulgence, Chair, I'll be pleading with Mr. Malema not to indulge in the goals, but to be precise to the point.
After Mr. Malema, is there still another person?
He's just supported by a person who is really the head of our national statistics, who deals with statistics. So in case we may require some expert view on her, particularly on that question from Honorable Mola on the accuracy of the statistics, so that we avoid what Honorable Judge was talking about, the danger, and deal with the statistics that are concerned. Then I'll wrap up, Chair. It shouldn't take us more than 10 minutes.
Thank you, DG, and thanks once again, Chairperson. I'll try to be very brief in respect of the question on the specificity on the plans for the recovery or to deal with the impact. This is in progress, Chair. We will provide a report that deals with the actual action plan with the activities and the timeline. So this is what we plan to do for the new financial year. We'll provide a report in that respect with the details, as I said, and we'll try and the plan should really concentrate on the quarter one so that we do as many activities as possible so that we can then gain traction. The other two questions really from Honorable Janchi and Mola are more related. And I think my colleague will deal with it, but I think as a pretext, I can say that we did qualify that the data that we have is a conservative estimate, I think, based on the fact that, that we're still rebuilding the systems. I think the IT people did mention some of the work that they're doing to clean up the system. So what we have is what is actually available in the system. It's not what with Samsung, it may not be accurate in respect of, the capturing itself. But if you were to go and extract the same data on the dates that we have given, you'd actually end up with the same number. But that number may, as I said, may not be the true reflection of, the extent of the backlogs because of the challenges around the reliability of the system in, the data that has been captured. Some costs not being able to actually capture, some of the data. But in that respect, I will then say that the request that has been made by Honorable Janji to go and provide a report at discrete points that shows, the backlog say prior COVID and then post COVID. After the ransomware attack, when the contract expired, and then up to the point when the SOS and the CRT also started malfunctioning. So we will break up that report that will then show at different points where that loss went. But we'll also do a double check with the NPA and the chair, so that we come closer as the three parties on the data that we have around what is a reasonable and an acceptable estimate of the backlogs. So I wouldn't put my neck on the block on the 100% reliability of the data given the issues that I raised. But that's what we have at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, I think Mr. Malema, by the way, my name is Boleka Matoba. I am responsible for the National Operations Center. That is where we complete the information that we have. I think Mr. Malema has already covered what I wanted to say in the sense that what we report on is not a thumbs-up. But 100% of what the backlog is, it is not. In the sense that what we report on is what is captured by the courts. There are some challenges with the courts not being able to capture and sometimes to capture on time. In the sense that sometimes the systems are not available or there's downtime. Those are the issues, some of the issues that the courts are dealing with. Now, as again, Mr. Malema has said, the report on backlog, we should be able to actually break it down to backlog cases that we've dealt with prior 2021 and prior the ransomware attack. We should be able to provide that report. Yes, and I think,
So in essence, you are saying that you are going to provide a report.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Chair, I think there was a matter that I just discovered, I think, from Honorable Horn that was not responded to. It was about the PAB telephony that was not working in Bombela. I've just asked the colleagues that they urgently deal with. And the second one, I think, related to the ICMS and the loading, that there was an infraction of the ransomware that they shouldn't be loading. You dealt with that. Oh, okay. So can you deal with the PABS, please?
Before you proceed, this is the first of two engagements that we are going to be having with you, with yourselves, with respect to the oversight visit that we have had. So I would ask Honorable Horn if he's comfortable with a view that says that issues that are not related to this CRT, because we are still going to call the department to respond to some of the issues that we discovered during the oversight visits. That maybe we deal with some of them at that particular time, because we still have to deal with the issue of the cannabis bill before the House starts. Will you be comfortable with that, Honorable Horn?
Thank you, Chair. I really only used this as an example as to why I believe there's broader contract management issues, but on that, we can park the specifics around that issue for the further meeting.
Thank you very much, Honorable Juan.
Okay, thank you very much. We are grateful to Honorable Juan, and we'll work on that. So the quick issues, but maybe to start with the consequence management. We should be able to have a comprehensive report where the mechanism trying to look into what happened if there was any form of a lapse from responsible officials. But I must state up front that we already have the challenge that majority of the people who were supposed to be on the steering wheel at the time are no longer in the system. So there's that reality as well, that if you look at the CFO who was suspended in July, 2020, as well as the Chief Director of Supply Chain, who will have been bearing a majority of the responsibility for the management of those contracts, have left the system. And secondly, some of the people who were in the procurement committee that were supposed to work on the system, their contracts lapsed and they left. So in the main, it could well be that those that were came in when the game was already in extra time, losing 5-0, might be the one that would be hoping that they can give some explanation. So there's that reality, but we're not leaving the measure unattended, so that there's no sense of us not necessarily holding ourselves accountable. The element of the agency that Honorable Nivod Dragas has raised, I think we're doing our best to treat the situation as an emergency. And from what we have, the 4-weekly milestones that we have, if for whatever reasons we are returning here, even including for the presentation of the annual performance plan, we should be able to give an update. We're trying our best on a weekly basis to get a sense of what the system is doing on the ground, including those other identified interventions that we're trying to bring in to make sure that we assist in addressing the identified challenges. There have been some interventions in specific areas and specific costs, and the reports that we've been getting is that they are able to proceed with those. But generally, Honorable Janji, on the recovery plan, I must make this admission. My assessment is that since the advent of modernization and the deployment of modern technology to assist with court administration or administration of justice or modernization of the justice system, I think there's been an over-reliance on the system to the extent that the key basics, I think, were forgotten. Two basics. One, business continuity plan, to say, how do you remain resilient and agile that even when you are attacked or you have a problem, you can still allow the system to continue. In other words, allow the wheels of justice to continue. And I think with the ransomware attack and as well as the challenge of the CRT, we got exposed in that respect that we were not good with business continuity plans. And that's a priority that colleagues are working on to ensure that there will always be one incident or another, that even when that happens, the system has to be adaptive and agile, able to continue without major, hindrances. Secondly, I can't say we had a disaster recovery plan. And then the two incidents as well, the ransomware attack as well as the CRC, are some of the examples that I think have exposed us, that this over-reliance that I'm talking about, that we never left the room for a possibility that there could be this failure. And when that failure occurred, this is how we're going to ride the storm. So those are some of the observations that we have made as we work on the system. And linked to that, why was the minister, when we were quarterly meeting, only informed at the end of November? So in terms of the deflating, the 3 monthly quarters, or first quarter, which is the first quarter, we started on the 1st of October, I must emphasize this point that April, May, June, July, we had the interim, intervention using the variation of the other contract. But the problem is really, then suddenly we had a ransomware attack in September and the part of October. But there was a procurement process that was running, and obviously there will be an attempt to keep a safe distance between procurement matters and the political executive, so that we don't necessarily get them to get involved. I think there's always that thin line and the safety that we all of us would want to adhere to, that ministers are not involved per se in procurement. And I fully understand that that's not the point we're raising. So in that quarter, which is the third quarter, October to December, when then we realized that the interventions we're trying to make, the problems associated with CETA, we were not going to be able to resolve them at official level after we made attempts. We therefore required the minister to engage at the political level for that definition, which then anyway was also not forthcoming, and ultimately then the accounting officer was put in a position where the only option available, and having exhausted all the available avenues, was an emergency procurement
which meant disregarding any form of a procedure, but just went for service provider that had the ability to do the service. And this company happens to be the company that had installed the court recording technology. And then Treasurer was able to come in and regularize that process by giving us a 12-month of a sole service provider deviation, which allowed us to be back to where we are, where we have a service provider who is able to assist us for now. Now, in so far as my assessment, I remember Honorable Judge yourself saying when I started at the beginning of the year that I'm in a case of fixing a plane while flying. I must admit to you that I didn't have a full appreciation of what you meant. But if you were to ask me now to do a thesis of what is the meaning of exactly what you said, I can do a thesis and pass it with flying colors. And because part of what we did, you will recall in one meeting, we presented a turnaround plan. And that turnaround plan, together with senior management, we still remain convinced that it's assisting us to steer the department during this very difficult period. But at the same time, as we proceeded, we continued to identify more aspects similar to the ones that we identified. And I've accepted that as we start next month with a new financial year, the honeymoon of me being new will be over. So from the next 2 weeks when we start, I've completed the year, I will no longer be new. And I know the expectation that honorable members, you will be having on me and the team. And I must mention that in so far as the strategic management of the department is concerned, we have had a complete overhaul. The current colleagues who are sitting in the executive committee of the department, more than 90% of us are less than 24 months in those positions. Albeit of the fact that some of the colleagues have been in the department previously, but the entire senior management, the DG level upwards, has completely changed. Colleagues, there are new colleagues who have been appointed. And I think we have the full appreciation of the historic challenge that lies on our shoulders in terms of taking forward the process to reposition the department, to make sure that the department is at the center of delivery of access to justice for all. And I think there is that full appreciation. And I must say that it could not have been a better assessment tool than the Auditor General's reports of the past three periods, 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021, as well as we are now dealing with the issues for 2021, 2022. That has laid a solid basis for us to appreciate the problems of the department. And I openly say the original sin remains procurement in this department. And linked to that, ICT procurement. And of course, the twin part of it being the contract management. And this is what we are sorting out. And we are not planning for the future. We are on it. And as we come back in a few weeks to present the APP for the new financial year 2022-2023, we'll be clearly showing the steps that we'll be taking to address those particular problems. Down to the backlog as an issue. We have agreed that there has to be a portable indicator for the annual performance plan of the department, that it has to be addressed at that level, because it is key to delivery of access to justice for all. So as we come, we'll be showing you how on a quarterly basis we will be trying to achieve, we'll be trying to redress or address the whole issue of backlog. It's historic. We have no illusion that it can be achieved in one financial year. But our commitment, all of us, will be to ensure that we fundamentally address it. And maybe finally, Chair, you remember at some point we did mention to you that we're going to conduct skills audit. We have just concluded that process, particularly for senior managers as well, to get a sense of what the challenges that we have at senior management level are. But what has occurred in the year as we try to fill senior management vacancies? And I think we have done our best to attract and recruit the best talent there is in the market
requirements permitting. And we have brought a good number of talented, dedicated and patriotic South Africans who have joined the fold of the senior management of the department. And we are very convinced that using that analogy that we gave at the beginning of the year, that we were not necessarily going to promise to challenge for the championship. We think we are ready in the new year to challenge for the championship, not just to avoid relegation, but to challenge for the championship. And we are not deluded and we are not oblivious to the challenges, but we think we are up to the task. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, and to your team. As I have said, this is a beginning of quite a few meetings that we are going to have with you, with yourselves, based on the visits that we have had, and we are going to continue to have them as part of our oversight visits. If I may just ask you one issue, DG, quickly. Since you took over as a DG, how many people did you take through the consequent processes, except those that were charged for corruption and resign, just for incompetence and other things?
Just from the top of my head, I know of one case in a senior management level that is currently running, and we hope to conclude it in the next before the end of April. We hope that it concluded. It also has some hallmarks of performance related to it. But I know, Chair, you did raise this with me previously, that beyond charging people for corruption and impropriety, you would want to see us dealing with having consequence management for poor performance. And what I'm glad of is that the management of the department, the very senior management of the department, is sitting with me in this room, but also is joining online. And so they know what is expected of us at this court when we appear before you.
No, thank you very much. I think one issue that we just have to put it to your attention, that this process, we are required to report to the House about the oversight visit and what we have done. So this is part of that process, and so that we can have a report to the House in the next quarter. And the issue that was raised by Honorable Janji and Honorable Nibor Drachens, it's going to form part of the to the House. We are going to ask the House to engage the Public Service Commission. We do think that those of us who have served in this committee before, and I think even Honorable Swart and other members, most of what we are hearing, we have heard it before. Now, as representatives of the people, one of the problems that our people are faced with, it's a collapsing office of the master. So we can talk about all of these things that we are turning things around, we're changing this, we're changing that, but at the coal face of what is facing our people, it's a dysfunctional system. And time has come that as the representatives of the people, we can no longer just be satisfied with administrative reports when impact on the ground is different from what we are hearing from the administrative reports. We can no longer accept it, because we must be able to say to our people, indeed we have an understanding of what are the challenges in the Department of Justice and Correctional Services. We have to say to our people, we have a department that is fit for purpose or is fit for purpose. For instance, if you have for some time when there was no BAC, what kind of a department is that? When your own risk assessment identified this issue in 2018-2019, and we're just talking about just one issue. You know that when we deal with the department as a whole, there are a lot of other issues. Even when we met with the judiciary in the various provinces, there are quite a number of challenges that our people are faced with from the department. So I cannot really say we are just going to trust what you are telling us. I think we have reached a stage. It's not a reflection on you as individuals, but your predecessors for many years who have been promised many turnarounds. We have been promised many turnarounds. Now, you have, the minister said at some point the vacancy rate was 28%. You are going to bring it down to 17%. And I got a sense that in a way you are self-satisfied as an achievement that you have brought it from 28 to 17. But based on whose standards? Well, the public service says 10% and below. Even 17% is way too high. It's way too high. Unacceptably high. So on our side, we just want to let you know that we are going to have a much more detailed terms of reference that we are going to develop as a committee, so that when a resolution is put before the House for the Public Service Commission to assist, to come and assist, it is based on those detailed resolutions. This is meant to strengthen the capacity of the state. This is meant to ensure that our people are served properly by our government. It's not a vote of no confidence on anyone. We understand that most of you are new in this department. You have just been appointed to senior management, but we are interested and much more interested in systems, in improving the systems, systems that will outlive all of us. We don't want systems that are based on the incumbents. If they leave, everything collapses. We want to ensure that we assist, we work with yourselves to strengthen the state as a whole. Honorable Janji raised an important point that the vacancy rate has been high since 2011. It's now 2022, and we are happy that it's going to be 17%. So that is not a department that on its own we can say it can turn the corner in a short period of time. In fact, my view is that with all your best endeavors, it can take close to 10 years at the rate at which we are going. And our people are not ready to wait for 10 years. They are not ready. They want a change now. So we have an obligation ourselves to ensure that we lend a hand to ensure that this department is turned around urgently. So we are still going to also go back to our records of this meeting and to check some of the issues that members raised as further information that was recovered from yourselves. We will be writing to you to request that particular information, but there are other issues that we are still going to come back to you to raise. For instance, it will be important that you can start preparing for, start now engaging the Department of Public Works. There is a disaster waiting to happen at Pembridge, a magistrate court. And the judiciary and everybody there is concerned that that court can collapse at any time. So these are the challenges that we are concerned that we awake at night, and we think that you have the right intentions, you have the right skills, but we need a faster pace than what we are getting. Thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, DG, and to your team. I'm not sure whether...
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure whether Dr. Lutz is still around.
Good afternoon, Chair. I am present in the meeting.
Thank you very much. Can we now go to the panel again? Thank you very much, Dr. Lutz. Can you take us through?
Recording stopped.
Thank you, Chair. I will do so. I'm going to try my best to represent
recording in progress.
Roberts as best as I can. And hopefully I did a good job at it. The proposed amended bill was emailed to members, I think, yesterday. My apologies for the short turnaround time, but we were quite pressed for time. The first thing members will see in the proposed amendments is to the long title of the bill, and